Next item on the agenda, public hearing, consideration of proposed regulations for 2008 crabbing season. Mr. Travelstead.
While you were on your break, we placed three packages of blue paper in front of you. I want to make sure you have each of those. The thinnest one is some additional data that you can glance at while I'm going through the presentation that may be of interest to you. Some of this will appear on the screen later, but you didn't have it in your mail out. The second and thickest package is additional public comment that we've received since the mail out. Importantly, this package contains the recommendations of the Virginia Institute of Marine Science, Dr. Wells, as well as the Chesapeake Bay Foundation. Their comments are in there, and the Coastal Conservation Association, as well as a number of individuals who have chosen to comment on the issues. The final package is 10 regulations that we will ask you to amend or repeal today to implement the staff recommendations. So that we can go through those one by one at some point if you like, but we'll be talking about them as we go through the presentation. Let me apologize up front for the length of this presentation. It is going to take a while to get through. As you know, you have directed staff to advertise a number of various measures for today's meeting, and we will present an evaluation of those to you. But first, we need to update you on the status of the winter dredge survey, which is the latest science on the issue. As you know, that information was released last week in a meeting with Governor Kane and Maryland Governor O'Malley. I'm sure you've read some press articles about it as well, but we'll go into the details for you this afternoon. And then that'll be followed by a description of the various alternatives, their benefits and detriments, and finally a summary of the public comment we've received and final staff recommendations. The latest information on fishing mortality is not good. It shows that we continue to overfish the blue crab. Harvesting exploitation in 2007 was up to 60%. That is, the fishery, the commercial fishery alone, removed 60% of the abundance of crabs that were in the population during that year. Again, to remind you, and I know you've seen this graph many times, the last dot on the end there in red is the latest value. But just by way of a reminder, the target that we shoot for annually is 46%. If we're above 53%, it's considered overfishing, and we have been above that overfishing threshold for 7 out of the last 10 years. And, of course, in 07, we're well above the 0.46 target. The winter dredge survey has been conducted since 1990. And there are some 1,500 sampling stations around the bay, both in Maryland and Virginia. This is the control rule updated with the 2007 number. Between 2006 and 2007, population abundance did increase to some degree, but unfortunately, as you saw on the previous slide, so did the harvest rate. And so we're in the red zone or the pink zone, if you will, under the control rule, and that dictates that we have to take action to drive the harvest down back to under the overfishing level. As I said, the dredge survey has been around now for 17 years, and it has provided a great deal of information to us in recent years that we have not had to manage this fishery. But the first question you should ask, I think, is the winter dredge survey producing information that is sufficiently reliable upon which to base management decisions? And the answer to that question is yes. Part of that yes comes from this analysis that you see in this slide, and it's simply a linear representation of the relationship between crab abundance and baywide harvest. And you can see there's a fairly strong straight line relationship there with an R-square of some 86%, which indicates that's a very high value in terms of natural resource management equations of this type, indicating that there is a strong relationship between abundance as detected by the winter dredge survey and the subsequent harvest. If you look at it another way, you can compare the actual harvest that is reported by the fishermen to the predicted harvest based on the abundance as described by the winter dredge survey, and graph that over time, and you'll see that there is a fairly close relationship between the two. And that tells us that the winter dredge survey is a robust survey and one that you can certainly use for managing this resource on. And in fact, that's what the scientists have concluded. There is a tiny bit of good news from the winter dredge survey this year, and that is the number of age zero crabs, or the recruits, the youngest crabs in the population, did show a small increase in 2007, or the two up till this point in time. Unfortunately, even with that small increase, that value, the 2008 value, is still the 12th lowest in the 18-year time series of the dredge survey. And as you can see, it's well below the average number of crabs, as indicated by the green line, green horizontal line. Here are the latest abundance values from the winter dredge survey. Again, we primarily look at the age 1-plus crabs. Those are the spawning adults in the population. And unfortunately, the 2008 dredge survey indicates a decline in the value from 143 million crabs in 2007 to 120 million age 1-plus crabs in 2008, or about a 16% drop in that one-year time period. For 15 years now, consecutively, the abundance of spawning adult crabs in Chesapeake Bay has been below the interim target level recommended by the scientific community. Again, that's the depicted here with the green horizontal line of 200 million crabs. The fishery will not be considered healthy until these values get at and above that green line. One interesting point I want to draw to your attention: as you know, this commission adopted a series of regulations in 2001 and 2002 in an effort to reduce harvest by some 15%, along with the state of Maryland. And you can see in those years, there was, for a brief period of time, an upward trajectory in abundance, which suggests that the regulations we put in place in those years perhaps had some effect. But unfortunately, since that point in time, there has been a downward trend in abundance, moving kind of up and down from year to year, but nonetheless, the trend is downhill toward the minimum safe level that we see depicted by the red horizontal line. The fear is that if this value ever drops below the red line, there can be no there is no guarantee that the population will be able to recover from those levels. We've been there once in the past, right at the line. We certainly want to do everything we can to avoid going below that line. And it doesn't necessarily have to be harvest that could drive us below that line. It could be changes, further changes in habitat, further declines in water quality, increases in predation, environmental events that affect recruitment of the young crabs back from the ocean into the bay. Any significant event in those areas could affect this. And that's our concern, because a lot of those things we can't control. We can't control environmental factors. There are some additional evidence that further corroborates the winter dredge survey, and that is the VIMS summer trawl survey, which also provides a relative index of abundance of crabs. And you can see here the same kinds of low levels in the last 10 years or so of all crabs. And if you look specifically at the adult females sampled from that survey, again, you see some very worrisome figures since the mid-1990s. These are females that are sampled right on the spawning ground, so the numbers are not directly comparable to the winter dredge survey, which is looking bay-wide, but it's telling us the same story, that abundance is down, and abundance of females on the spawning ground is terrible. And of course, Dr. Lipsius has brought these figures to our attention many times over the years. In terms of bay-wide harvest, Dr. McConaughey has described, I think, to you and certainly to the advisory committee, from about 95 backwards in time, we would look at those harvest numbers and say that this is a relatively healthy fishery. You expect ups and downs in fisheries. Not every year is going to be above average. There are going to be increases and decreases as you go along in time. And unfortunately, what we've experienced since the mid-90s, while we're still seeing variation, it's a very serious downward trajectory indicating that the population is in trouble. Now, we don't use these data alone to manage the fishery for obvious reasons, and you're well aware of that. That's why we have things like the VIMS trawl survey and the winter dredge survey. But it's just a further indication that we have some serious problems with the crab fishery. A little bit more detail on the harvest. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on these. These are statewide figures. The one I want to concentrate, this is in numbers of crabs. But let me go to this one. This is harvest from the Chesapeake Bay in terms of numbers of crabs. Looking at peeler and soft, hard crabs, and the dredge fisheries separately. And this is where we begin to look when we start to formulate our recommendations to you. The question is, which of these crabs are most valuable and which should be protected by regulation? We know, and all of the data that you're going to see from this point on are based on harvest from 2004 to 2007. We're reluctant to base our calculations on a single year because there's so much variation from year to year. And so staff has utilized the four-year period I indicated to base their calculations. And you can see in the dredge fishery, it has varied from 5 to 10 million crabs in that four-month fishery. And we know that about 97% of those crabs are females that are all pregnant. And if they're protected, would survive to spawn the following year. and we'll get more into that later. The bottom line from the winter dredge survey information, that is the fact that we are overfishing at a 60% removal rate, and we have seen a decline in abundance of spawners from 143 million to 120 million, indicates that we must reduce harvest by 34%. Reducing harvest by 34% will bring us back down, if we're successful, back down to the 46% removal rate, which would stop overfishing. And it would also, by targeting females, and the Chesapeake Bay Stock Assessment Committee has recommended that we concentrate on protecting females because that increases our odds of success. These are the spawners. These are the ones that will produce the young crabs that you'll see the following spring. And as Lynn Fegley told the two governors just last week, you know, the more mommies you have, the more babies you produce the following year. And that's basically what we're trying to do here. If we are successful here in Virginia and in Maryland, we will return an estimated 20 to 26 million crabs to the spawning population. We think that's a significant number, and it is doable. In addition to the need to reduce the harvest of female crabs by 34%, it's good to know that the action that you have already taken at your February and March meetings will contribute to that effort. And we'll talk about a little bit more about what percentage we can assign to your prior actions. But unfortunately, we're here today because we have to add to that value to make sure we reach the 34%. Just to refresh your memory, back in February, we raised the Pila crab minimum size to 3 1/4 inches, and then it changes again in mid-July to 3 1/2 inches. We required that the larger of the two cull rings be open in crab pots set in Chesapeake Bay. We prohibited license stacking. We kept the dredge fishery at 53 vessels. And then in your March meeting, we expanded the closure of the blue crab sanctuary by an additional month, adding the month of May to the closed period. And there's a depiction of the actual sanctuary itself. Combined, we have estimated that the actions that you took in February and March will amount to approximately an 11% reduction in the harvest of female crabs. These are the calculations. I'm not going to go through them in detail, but we start with a target harvest of females, and then look at each of the individual measures that you've put in place and determine what loss of harvest would occur, and simply add that all together, and we come up with 11%. You're going to see this language here in a number of other slides, the CRSP. It's simply shorthand for the cull ring regulation, the sanctuary expansion, and the peeler pot size limit actions already in place. So when you see those letters, that's what it stands for. Just by way of showing you an option that the staff really did not engage much in, but just to show you the severity of the types of measures that we would be contemplating, if you agree that the prior measures meet 11% and you simply want to reach the rest of the way to 34% through a fall closure, but not affect the dredge fishery, you would have to close crab potting on September 2nd, which would eliminate 3 months of the fishery. And of course, staff is not at all in favor of that because it would affect literally hundreds of fishermen. If you wanted to close 1 month of the dredge fishery, you would still need to close the pot fishery on September 27th. Again, not a very palatable option and one that we considered no further than what you see on this slide. One word of caution before I go into the rest of this, about the 34% reduction. We have a lot of experience with attempting to achieve percentage reductions in harvest in a number of fisheries, as have most of the Atlantic Coast states in various fisheries. And the what we have learned from those actions is that it is, while it is easy to achieve percentage reductions on paper based on the data that we have, it's rare that you see exactly those reductions when the regulations are applied in the field. And it's primarily because, in part, fishermen adjust their fishing activities to accommodate the regulations and to work around them in a legal fashion to maintain their livelihoods. And quite often in doing that, they are able to recoup their losses that they might experience from a closed season or a culling measure by fishing harder during other times of the year. And in reality, while it says on paper you're going to achieve a 34% reduction, you don't. The other caution is not all of the percentages that I'm going to show you for various measures are additive. You can't just simply add the numbers of savings from one month to another or from one measure to another because of these recoupment factors. Crabs saved by a closure of the dredge fishery, for instance, will be available to the pot fishery on March 17th. And so if you take no action to protect those saved crabs, there will be a very sizable recoupment of those harvest by the pot fishermen. And so that's a very serious word of caution, just to be careful. And in fact, what it begs that you adopt measures that go beyond 34% to ensure that you hit your target. And we've seen this, we've seen where we've had to do this in a number of other fisheries. These are the measures that you have advertised for today's hearing. We're going to go through most of these, but I would say up front that while we advertised cull rings and peeler pots, we don't have a lot of knowledge in this area. We don't know, first off, we don't know if cull rings and peeler pots will work. And we certainly don't know what sizes they should be. And so this is going to require a lot more field study before we would come back comfortably with some recommendations in that area. And so you will see nothing else on peeler pot cull rings in the presentation. In terms of shortening the winter dredge fishery, why are we recommending this? Just a word on the percentages. If you agree that the CRSP gets us 11% and you completely close the dredge fishery, that brings you from 11% to 28%, leaving 6 additional percent to go if you assume everything's additive and there's no recoupment and there's perfect enforcement. One way to achieve that is through a fall closure. That brings you up to the 34%, and the date is October 27th. If you do not want to close the dredge fishery entirely, but perhaps just want to close 1 month, say December or mid-December to mid-January, you get significantly less credit, obviously, because you're not closing it entirely, and that forces you to adopt an earlier closure in the pot fishery, which I'll show you affects several hundred fishermen. This is staff's recommendation. This is one of them, the top line here. Complete closure of the dredge fishery and a fall closure of October 27th. Why are we recommending this? it's not just a matter of achieving a 34% reduction in harvest. There are limitless numbers of ways to do that if you assume recoupment won't occur. It seems to us to maximize the benefit of a 34% reduction. Number one, you target females, and we've all agreed to that. You target females that are more valuable than others. And we know in the fall and winter, those females have all been impregnated. They're all pregnant. And they'll all be able to sit there until spring. We know that you have closed the spawning sanctuary starting May 1. And so that leaves a window of opportunity from March 17th to May 1st. If we protect those females in the fall and the winter, you've increased their odds of surviving to get to that spawning season starting on May 1. Now, we cannot leave the spring pod fishery alone. They'll recoup everything that we saved in the fall and winter. So there are things we're going to have to do there as well. But it just makes sense to us that if you target females and you target those that are pregnant in a way that gets them to the spawning grounds, you have maximized your effort. By closing the fall fishery and the winter dredge fishery, you affect fewer fishermen. And you stop the harvest on the least valuable crab. And we'll show you data on the price paid. The winter dredge crabs late fall crabs tend to get a lower price because demand is off. You know, when demand is high in the summer, prices are higher. And so if you have to cut out fisheries, it seems to staff that you cut out those fisheries that have the lowest levels of participation and produce the cheapest crab or the least valuable crab to the waterman. The other thing you achieve by closing the dredge fishery is you stop the wastage that we know occurs in that fishery. When the dredgers are working on hard bottom in January and February, there are large numbers of crabs that are killed or cut up or wasted, can't be used by the processors. And so you do add that additional benefit to these calculations. We can't quantify it. We don't know the degree of wastage in the fishery, but we do know it exists. And by putting a stop to it, you add just that much more benefit from that measure. The advisory committee, I'm going to try to bring in the advisory committee's recommendations as we go through this as well. The advisory committee considered a number of motions on the dredge fishery, one to close the season entirely and one to close the dredge fishery in January through March, and neither of those motions passed. Ultimately, a motion to close just the hard bottom areas to dredging from January 15th to February 28th for a six-week period and to limit the daily harvest of the dredge fishery to 21 bushels per vessel did pass the advisory committee. Staff believes there's some problems, significant problems, with that proposal. Number one, it does not achieve the percent reduction that we need. And if you were to adopt it, even assuming it could be totally enforced and there would be no recoupment, you would still have to close the fall fishery around October 5th, which again affects far more fishermen than the 53 in the dredge fishery. If you look at those individuals who have participated in the dredge fishery, you will see that most of them also participate in other fisheries, primarily the crab pot fishery. And so elimination of the dredge fishery will cause economic impacts to those fishermen, undeniably. You are taking away their traditional livelihood for that 4-month period. but it's not their sole livelihood. I mean, they do participate in the crab pot fishery and the peeler pot fishery to some degree, and they will, as this resource rebounds, will be able to see some benefits, because that spring crab pot fishery, you are going to see an increased abundance of crabs, and eventually the entire population, we think, will increase in abundance and everyone will benefit. If you look at the number of days worked by those dredgers, you will see that many of them fish are in the dredge fishery only to a limited degree. In fact, 45 of the 69 vessels described here worked less than 30 days in that four-month season. And in fact, 11 of them in the most recent year, 11 of them participated less than 10 days in the fishery. Certainly, there are others that participated a much higher number of days, but not every dredger out there is equally engaged in the fishery, and so the impacts will vary from vessel to vessel. If you look at the number of pounds that the vessels are landing, again, the 45 vessels that were crabbing less than 30 days, these are harvesting, in some cases, less than 20,000 pounds, 30,000 pounds of crabs. In terms of dollar value, and this is total dockside value, this is not profit, this is total value of the catch when it comes to the dock. Again, some pretty low numbers for some of the vessels in the fishery. Look at it another way. Again, the 45 vessels that are represented from this point in this direction are landing less than $20,000 worth of crabs during the whole season. And, of course, profit's going to vary from vessel to vessel depending upon their expenses and crew. But a lot of this is overhead for fuel and paying a mate and upkeep of the vessel. If we move on to crab pot and peeler pot limits, we have proposed, or you have proposed, reductions by 10 to 30%. We think ultimately crab pot and peeler pot reductions are the ultimate way to manage this fishery. By removing gear from the water, you more equitably treat all fishermen. You reduce the harvest at some point, and spread that loss of harvest over an entire season instead of trying to concentrate it in a particular area. Unfortunately, we do not understand the relationship between the reduction in the number of pots and harvest. A 30% reduction in the number of pots does not equate to a 30% reduction in harvest. We don't know the relationship, and so we cannot tell you a percent reduction associated with any type of reduction in the number of pots. Nonetheless, this is the direction we want to head in the long term, and it's going to take a lot of work on staff's part to figure this out in the months ahead. As you can see, there has been a downward trend in the number of licensees who are reporting crab harvest over recent years, and if you assume everyone is fishing the maximum legal amount that they can fish, you can see a decline in the number of pots from about 520,000 to 360,000. And yet we know over this time period, in spite of that reduction, sort of a theoretical reduction in the number of pots, exploitation is still high, we're overfishing, and abundance hasn't gone up. And so it's a indicator that when it comes time to looking at pot reductions in the long term, we're going to have to take some very serious cuts to achieve real savings. Nevertheless, pot reductions are needed, and they're going to be needed in the spring of next year to make sure that the crabs that we recommend you save in the fall fishery and the winter dredge fishery are simply not recouped by the spring pod fishery. If we don't take action to significantly reduce the number of the pods, we will have wasted the efforts and the impacts that we placed on the fall fishermen and the winter dredgers. The next measure was, let me go back to that and just say that the advisory committee did recommend a 30% reduction in the number of pots per licensee for this year. But they recommended that as an alternative to a fall season closure. And while we support pot reduction, staff cannot recommend it at this time as a replacement for a fall season closure for a couple of reasons. One already stated, we don't know the impacts. We don't know the percent reduction associated with a 30% reduction in pots. And number two, the state of Maryland has chosen to impose a fall season closure on their fishermen starting October 23rd. If we do not follow suit with a fall closure of our own, we will erase most of the benefits that Maryland is providing to the stock. We will harvest the crabs that they're trying to save as they come across the border in the fall unless we close the fishery. And we have seen evidence of this occurring previously, and I'll show it to you as it comes up on the slide. Back to cull rings. Staff supports an imposition of the larger cull ring in the tributaries as you have advertised. We believe it not only results in a reduction in the harvest of females to some degree, it also helps the male crab side of the equation, which is low in abundance as well. And although that's the emphasis this time is not on the male crab, any action that will help its abundance contributes to the health of the fishery and a better product. The more we can do to improve the quality of Virginia's product, and we heard a processor stand here a couple of months ago and tell us that compared to the products he buys in other states, Virginia's product is one of the worst he sees. If we have to reduce harvest to help this fishery, we ought to also be doing things that improve the quality of the harvest so that fishermen who are still in this fishery can see the economic benefits from that. And one way to do that is with this 2 3/8-inch cull ring. You advertised this measure for the tributaries. Obviously, you cannot expect watermen on day one tomorrow morning if you adopt this to have those cull rings in their pots. There needs to be some period of time for installation. Retrieval of the pots, removal of the old cull rings, installation of the new. And so we're recommending a July 1 effective date for this. And unfortunately, that affects the additional value you gain from that. You get, 11% from the prior adoptions. So you pick up 3% from that measure if you implement it in July 1. But again, it's not necessarily additive to the fall closures because of recoupment. It is sort of an additional safeguard that helps us get to that 34% and actually achieve it in reality on the ground, on the water. The advisory committee endorsed this cull ring and actually went further and endorsed its implementation statewide, not just in the tributaries. And when you spread it statewide into the bay, you start to save more female crabs. And again, implementing July 1, you get that up to 6%. So there would be some significant benefit to imposing that statewide, although staff really didn't look at that until the advisory committee commented, because you had not advertised that measure. A maximum size on female crabs. Size sanctuaries for crabs is an interesting concept. Unfortunately, it has its downsides too. We were interested in this measure at a time when Maryland was also considering it. They have a fairly large number of female crabs in their waters in the fall that they thought they wanted to save. They've now decided to look at bushel limits and early season closures instead. The problems they found with the maximum size is it presents a significant additional enforcement burden, because it requires a lot of culling, and it requires a lot of culling on the part of fishermen. And in the process of culling, crabs are going to start biting one another and injure themselves, and in some cases die, and reduce the value of the product. And so they abandoned this measure fairly early on. And as a result of them not protecting the large females that would migrate down into Virginia in the fall, we have abandoned this measure as well and do not recommend it to you. Bushel limits rarely achieve savings, primarily because fishermen are able to recoup their losses from one day to the next. A fisherman who sets 300 crab pots and on a particular day gets to his 200th pot and has on board the limit, whatever it is, doesn't go to the remaining 100 pots he has set and release those crabs. He leaves them in the water, he banks them, if you will, and that's where he starts crabbing the next day. So unless you set a bushel limit to such a low level that it convinces the waterman to pull gear out of the water, or to, you know, because it's costing him too much money, or he has to pay a mate to fish those extra pots, it's not going to save crabs. And in fact, you know, all the conversations I've had with watermen, none of them have told me, if you put a bushel limit on, I will willingly take crab pots out of the water. None of them have said that. And so we don't have a lot of faith that bushel limits, in fact, actually achieve, unless they're set extremely low and they are set according to the number of pots you're licensed to use. So you would have to have a separate bushel limit for the 100 pot category, the 150, the 200, the 300, and the 500 pot category. And then it would probably have to change monthly as crab abundance changes. So you can imagine the burden of having to enforce five different pot limits that change monthly when we have hundreds of landing locations that crabbers take their product back to. And it just is not workable. This is just an example of what catches look like by trip in the month of October in all of the pot fisheries, regardless of category. The red line would be the effects of a 25-bushel limit, assuming no recoupment. And you can see a 25-bushel limit has no effect whatsoever on the vast majority of all the trips taken. And while it might appear by this chart that it affects all of these trips, some of those crabs will be left in the water and caught the next day. And if some of them aren't caught by this particular trip, they might be caught by this particular trip the next day. So the benefits are recouped. You see the same thing in November. same type of activity, and that's in part why we prefer a fall closure of the fishery completely to protect those females. Reduction in recreational crab pots was another measure that was advertised. The advisory committee came to no conclusion on this. There are two types of recreational crabbers in Virginia. There are those that are unlicensed and have the right to set two crab pots per person, no license whatsoever. That is established in the code. And there are those who can purchase a VMRC commercial license for recreational use that allows them to set five crab pots. The five-pot license has been in existence for a number of years. It was instituted at a time when crabs were a little bit more abundant than they are now. And it's our belief that those who hold this five-pot license would tend to be the crabbers who are more inclined to pursue the crab. People who have the two-pot license tend to drop it off at the end of their dock, and if there are crabs there, good. And if there aren't, you know, they go to the grocery store and get something else to eat. The guys who have the five-pot license, in general, we think would have a tendency to pursue the crab beyond the end of their pier. This is described in the code as a commercial license that is available for recreational use. And given the status of the resource and the severe impacts that we are looking at, we believe it's time to eliminate this five-pot license for the recreational fishermen, at least until such time as the resource improves in abundance back to the 200 million crab level or the interim target. Will it result in a huge savings of blue crab? Not really. We know from a survey done in 2001 by Old Dominion University that the recreational harvest at that time was less than 4% of the total harvest. Nonetheless, we think every user group should pay or should participate in the conservation of this resource and its restoration. And while we did not advertise or really need to talk to the General Assembly about the unlicensed recreational crabber, we can affect the crabbers who are using this five-pot license, and we think it's equitable to eliminate this license at this time. It obviously will result in more savings as crabs become more abundant and begin to approach that 200 million level, and then at that point we can reconsider. This is this rehashing of all the options that you have seen over the last few minutes, showing the various degrees of reduction that you achieve with them, and then what additional reduction you would need in the fall fishery to achieve the full 34% reduction. And again, it is option B that we are recommending to you: 11% for the measures already adopted, statewide closure of the winter dredge fishery, and an October 27 closure of the fall pot fishery. Because the advisory committee did recommend closing hard bottom areas in the dredge fishery rather than a total closure, we did evaluate that. I mentioned that earlier, but our evaluation simply involved closing the red area to dredging because that's where a lot of the hard bottom areas are located. But they certainly don't take up that full area. But we used it because it corresponds to water body codes that we know the exact harvest of in those areas. And when you do that, we The hard bottom areas we refer to eastern dredge. Again, you only get about an 8% reduction from that closure instead of 17% by a complete closure. And that leads you to significantly longer fall season closure. This is the information I had referred to earlier about who's impacted with fall closures. We had some 409 crab potters who will be affected by the October 27th closure. If you don't close completely the dredge fishery, you have to back up the fall closure into October, in which case you're affecting 600 harvesters, something we wish to avoid, as opposed to the 53 who are now eligible to participate in the winter dredge fishery. We also looked at the value of the crabs that are harvested during these fall months, or actually it's across all seasons there, but you'll see there are obviously a number of full-timers who participate in that fall fishery, just as they do every month of the year. But there's also what appears to be some part-time crabbers who are crabbing into the fall as well, who make up some of these numbers as well. The other thing that can, and I mentioned this again, but these are the data we used, that closure of the fall fishery and the winter fishery tends to take away crabs that have the least value per bushel, and you can consistently see over the years that the late fall and winter fishery is the least valuable product, while the spring, the early spring, March, April, May are the real valuable crabs. And that's why you did not close the spring fishery early when you were considering that a couple months ago. Again, this looks at the number of trips that are taken in November, again, are quite small. So we're not affecting as many trips by closing the fall season as we would if we were trying to close something in the summer months. In that case, you're affecting five times more the number of trips that fishermen would take with a closure there. Here is, I mentioned this earlier, when in 2001, Maryland closed their season early. I'm sorry, in 2001, Maryland closed their season in November. And it appears that at least part of this blip up in Virginia catch is directly the result of that. You see it sort of on either side, some pretty low numbers. And that's because those crabs that Maryland saved simply came across the border and were harvested legally by our fishermen. Again, that's why we're recommending a fall closure to you this year. The measures that we are recommending here today are still short-term measures that are designed to achieve the 34% reduction and do so in a way that maximizes the benefits to the resource. We're not done with trying to manage this fishery. As you know, we're still working on an effort control system that can be responsive to annual changes in the resource. We need to reduce or eliminate latent effort. Imagine what's going to happen next spring if you close the dredge fishery and the fall fishery and save tens of millions of crabs during that time period. How good is the March and April harvest going to be if we don't adopt some regulations on it? Is that going to be enough to entice people who have not used their license for several years to get back into this fishery? Suddenly you magnify the problem with these latent licenses now being used. And so we've got to continue to work on that problem. And if we're going to be able to enforce the crab pot limits that we're talking about, we need a tagging program without question. And I think most fishermen realize that now. Finally, to public comment, we've received well over 300 written comments on this. This table updates the one that was mailed to you last week because we've received quite a few more letters to you. Most of them, in general, taken on face value and counted one for one, seem to support the recommendations that were advertised. There are a fair number of opposition as well. There are other recommendations. One that sort of influenced our thinking on the recreational issue was that there was a high number of letters received to reduce the 5-pot to 3-pot. Well, when you reduce 5-pots to 3-pots, and knowing that that license costs $36, and you can set 2-pots without buying any license at all, it was our feeling that the effects of going from 5 to 3 would in reality probably prevent most people from buying the license altogether. And that's what led us to conclude that we ought to go ahead and eliminate the license in the first place. There were a number of other comments that were offered by the public. You've been provided with these in advance, so I'm not going to go through them there, but there were quite a variety, including looking at income levels to determine who should be in and out of the fishery, eliminate part-timers from the fishery, focus on keeping the jobs associated with the full-timers, ban the harvest of all female crabs, which we know would eliminate the fishery altogether in Virginia. And this is the last slide summarizing each of the staff recommendations. The only one that I have not mentioned is the summonsing of individuals who've been convicted of 2 conservation violations in a 12-month period. The staff recommends that, of course. It's no conservation program can be effective without an equally effective enforcement program. The vast majority of fishermen are honest, work hard every day, but the guy who's out there continually violating the laws is not only harming the resource, he's taking money and product out of the pockets of the legitimate fishermen, and they should be dealt with accordingly. And so we do recommend the measure you've advertised, and that is if you're convicted of 2 conservation-related regulations. I'm not talking about I forgot to bring the fire extinguisher on the boat or I left a life jacket at home. Those are serious violations, but we're talking about blue crabs here today. We're talking about the measures that are designed to conserve that resource. Be glad to answer any questions.
Questions of Mr. Travelstead. Mr. Robbins.
Jack, thank you for your presentation. I have a handful of questions that I'd like to go through with you that essentially reflect some of the concerns that were raised in the committee discussion last week. One of the committee concerns that came out was the fact that the proposed strategy is essentially exclusively focused on conserving female abundance, and some of the thinking in committee was that the concern is indeed broader, and I think, as you're aware, Mr. Graham has submitted a letter requesting that we develop a network of upriver sanctuaries and evaluate that. That's something that the committee has talked to staff about. Is it likely that staff working together with VIMS would be able to develop an analysis for that for the 2009 season? In other words, consideration for that for next year?
It's certainly something we're working on, and I know Dr. Lipsius has spent a lot of time thinking and analyzing sanctuary and their concepts and value, and yes, that's something we could continue to bring back to the committee for evaluation.
Okay, and to follow up, I'd like to ask one question about the methodology as it relates to the calculations. This one of the concerns that came out of committee was that this is largely an accounting-driven process at this point because we are up against such a high hurdle to try to achieve a 34% conservation savings. But as we discussed that, the primary measure for the pot fishery that you proposed is to close the fall season. And my question is there any accounting in that for any sort of compensatory response? You spoke in your presentation about the fact that typically actions by the commissioner met with reactions in fishing practices. If you look back in history, certainly we saw responses to things like the 8-hour workday there were workarounds, et cetera. And so there are going to be, I think it's fair to say that based on history, there would be responses. But is there any sort of compensation built in for that?
The only the numbers associated with the fall closure are strictly the math on what's harvested during that time period, and therefore that's what's saved. There's no measures of recoupment or how easily a particular measure can be recouped. So we can't provide the math on that and say, you know, if the fall closure gives you 6%, should we back up the fall closure to get 12%, assuming half of that's going to be recouped? We did not do that. And we're not, other than the call ring, which we recommend going into effect on July 1st, there's no other measure this year to sort of counteract those recoupment issues.
Well, to that point, to follow up, the committee had expressed a very strong preference for, and this was in lieu of the fall closure, but it expressed a strong preference for immediate actions that would contribute to this year's spawning potential and also conserve crabs throughout this season by immediately reducing gear. And the recommendation, again, in lieu of a fall closure, was a 30% closure.
Yes.
And they also recommended and endorsed the bay-wide 2 3/8 cull ring, not on the eastern shore, but on the bay, not on the seaside. But
we have no objection to measures being placed, additional measures being placed on the fishery sooner than a fall closure, to sort of counteract the effects of recoupment. We cannot, however, recommend something like a pot limit going into effect now and not implementing a fall closure. If you do something, it would be in addition to the fall closure.
I understand that. And you've asked us to adopt a 30% pot reduction for the 2009 season, as I understand it. And I guess I need to ask about that, because it seems to me that we have already signaled as a commission and discussed here today that we are developing a long-term strategy that includes presumably pot tagging, effort control, et cetera, and that would hopefully include some sort of market-based transfers that would allow the state to manage the total effort in the fishery, but allow some sort of relief valve so that fishermen can make transfers and remain viable as the commission has to meet its conservation objectives. The question I have is if we set that specification today and say we're going to reduce it 30% for 2009, and we're coming into a process that has yet to be scoped, and we have a lot of issues to scope out with respect to latent permits, allocations, pot tags, et cetera. It seems to me that an alternative approach would be to ask staff to develop a timetable and come back to us next month with a presentation, for example, of a calendar and schedule for scoping these issues out and what the deadlines would be for setting the appropriate limits for pots for 2009, determining what sort of allocated basis we might use, determining how pot tagging might work. So, I mean, I think there's a lot yet to be done, but, for example, if you go with pot tags and say today we make our decision, we're cutting them by 30%, if you issued them to every licensee or every license holder, your effective potential effort could double. In other words, that allocated decision has to be made first, yeah. I think, before we can effectively set the effort level for 2009. Could you
comment on that? Our thinking on the pot limits and why we recommended them for spring of next year, a couple of reasons. Next spring, if you don't have measures in place come March 17th, everything you've saved in the fall and winter is going to be lost. It's going to be recouped, including what Maryland said. And so that's the biological reason. The other reason is today gives industry notice that this is what you can plan for in the spring. Now, I think it's fair to say in the meantime, as Rick and all of you have said, we want to work toward a long-term program that is based on management by pots. But we're very early in that process. While I'm supportive of it, I'm not sure at this point if industry is equally supportive. It's going to take a lot of work to get from where we are now to that kind of program. And if we're successful and get there, we may end up at a different place than 30% reduction. And that would be fine. But I thought it would be necessary to put the industry on notice today that come spring, expect this significant reduction in pots. And the third reason was simply we don't have crab pot tagging now. We hope to have it by spring. And that will allow the 30% reduction to be enforced.
Plus the 30% reduction could be reduced based on what other numbers are showing.
It could go either way between now and spring. It's very fluid, I recognize. We may come up with something that closely resembles that relationship that I described we don't have between catch and effort, and find that 25 is where we need to be, or 20, or 50. But there will be plenty of time to correct it between now and then.
Jack, so are you looking at that essentially as a placeholder that might be subject to change?
Okay. It's a placeholder.
Several other questions briefly. A couple of other actions that the committee took. We requested that the commission adopt a regulation requiring that crab pot and peter pot buoys be marked with not more than one identification number in order to facilitate law enforcement of pot limits. And that's something that we had considered for implementation by July 1. The other item was that we request that the commission consider a range of rationalization plans that would temporarily prevent part-time licensees from being activated in 2008. And yet you, subsequent to that request, looked at that for us, and that's in the commission's packet today. And unfortunately, when we first looked at that, we were looking at data that included other fisheries, I think, because in the Blue Crab Review Panel, there were some tables that suggested that people that made less than 20 trips per year accounted for 25% of the total trips in the fishery. And in fact, when you looked at it in finer detail, it only accounted for 2% of the cumulative total of the harvest. So that doesn't appear to be a viable management option at this time, but it's something we wanted to consider as a committee. And finally, Jack, can you comment on the control date? I've received some phone calls this weekend indicating that people might fish this year who have not been active simply because of the uncertainty in the regulatory climate right now, and I think it'd be helpful for the benefit of the public.
I appreciate you bringing that up, because that was something I had wanted to mention. As you know, you set a December 17, 2007 control date that ultimately could be used as the marker for deciding who's in the fishery and who's out. And there will obviously be people who have not been active in the fishery prior to that date but have held licenses for a long time, not used them, who suddenly, seeing the commission take all these actions and begin to talk about eliminating people in the fishery, will go out and go crabbing this year. My advice, and I hope it's your advice to them, is that while they may legally crab this year, it absolutely does not guarantee them a position in the fishery in the future. That was the purpose of the control date. And so while they may crab this year, and I just hate to see them make a significant investment to build up their pots and get their boat going, only to find that by next spring they're eliminated from the fishery. So it's just a word of warning to those folks.
Further questions? Mr. Tankard?
Excuse me, Jack. Would you reiterate again the numbers that would occur if we partially decrease the dredge season and sort of the give and take that goes on there?
It varies depending upon when you want to close the season.
Right.
But it's a complete closure gets you the 17% reduction.
Sure.
By itself. If you close the month of December only, you get 9%, or about half. But keep in mind, that calculation assumes no recoupment. If you close December, those crabs are still in the water. they're still there come January when the fishery opens. And there isn't any other crab harvesting gear more efficient than a dredge. So they will definitely be able to recoup the loss of the month of December to some degree. So it will, in reality, you will achieve less than the 9%.
There was the give and take. 53 active fishermen in the dredge fishery right now.
Yes.
But yet, in that November fishery, there are X number. And I'm sorry, you went
In recent years, about 400.
400.
Crab potters active in November. Yes, and 600 in October.
Thank you.
Mr. Fox.
Jack, can you? It seems to me we are searching for things we can do in 2008 instead of waiting to 2009 to try to address the crab population now. And can you tell me again why you wouldn't put the coal rings on everywhere in the bay, the main body of the bay, as well as in the tributary?
You simply didn't advertise that, so we just didn't bother to look at that until the advisory committee, which met last Wednesday, recommended you ought to go statewide with that. We have no objection to going statewide. It's a nice additional buffer to all of these recoupment factors and the fact that all these numbers aren't additive. It goes above and beyond, if you will.
And I think when you consider the suite of regulations we're considering now, that certainly would fall on the parameters of an emergency regulation.
So we could do that today, yes, sir.
Okay. Further questions? Jack, the closure date, fall closure date, not only is it a matter of saving crabs, it's a matter of timing as well, is it not, as far as the migratory pattern is concerned?
Sure. Yes.
I think it's important that
the fall migration of female crabs down the bay out of Maryland into Virginia waters headed to their overwintering grounds. I mean, it's become a very large fishery in Maryland. I am told they see daily catches on the order of 60 to 100 bushels during that fall migration. So a fall closure in Maryland will save a lot of crabs.
Further questions? Is it Ms. Packard? You get
yeah,
okay.
One more.
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry to be so full of questions, but
no. I couldn't see.
That's all right.
Anything but fingers.
As I understood in your testimony today, that 34% is, well, it's what we're hoping for. It's an accounting of the actions we take, but that accounting might not transfer into realistic numbers at the dock. If, in fact, you think that's the case and we might not end up with 34%, what of the measurements that we've advertised may help us get closer to 34% in a realistic fashion?
The call ring statewide would help. And you've got to do something next spring. You've got to make sure those crabs do survive, or most of them survive, to reach the spawning season, which you have closed, and that you've closed effective May 1.
As well as 100% of those 97% females that are caught in the dredge fishery.
Exactly. The other thing is the fact that by eliminating the dredge fishery, you're also stopping the wastage.
Right.
We can't put a number on that that's additive to the list, but it's there.
You also can't put a number on the exponential value of those crabs that are saved ultimately, can you? Beneficially? I'm talking about, I know you've given numbers as far as what you perceive to be those females that will spawn that are saved, but really it may ultimately be more than that on it. Or possibly.
Could be. Keep in mind, all of this is averaged over a four-year period, and that assumes conditions this year are equal to what we saw on average in the last four. And that may be a big assumption, too.
Further question? Mr. Schick, then Dr. McConaughey.
What percentage is female caught in the pot fishery for November? Did you tell us that?
I didn't tell you that.
So it's a significant.
Above 70%.
Somebody had suggested that a fall moratorium on female crabs and allowing the male crab still to be to fish, but if you're talking 70 to 80% of female already.
Well, let me clarify the fall closure. The fall closure is that we're recommending is only on the female.
Okay.
Only on females.
Dr. McConaughey?
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, the reason that we really need to look at the fall and winter and the spring is, you know, the life cycle is such that these mature females start to migrate down, as Jack said, in October. If we don't protect them then, we have a problem. We're going to overfish them. And you look at the overall reproductive value of these crabs, the ones coming from October through May still have 100% reproductive potential. They haven't had a chance to spawn. So we do need to look at them and attack the problem of protecting that new year class as it moves in. Otherwise, we're not really doing a whole lot in terms of spawning potential. So that's why we do need to have that early spring reduction in effort.
Thank you, sir. Further questions or comments?
Kim.
I'm sorry, Mr. Fox.
Jack, when you talked about the recreational closing, elimination of that five-pot license, you didn't mention what I think is the most significant reason for doing that. The problem here is not so much the watermen as it's the quality of the water. And that's caused by all of us who live in the Bay region and goes from not pumping out your septic tank frequently as you're supposed to not putting the money to improve the sewage treatment plants, to controlling agricultural runoff and all of that. So I see that recreational effort as really a way to send a message to the population at large that the problem is greater than, it's certainly not overfishing alone. It's a greater message, I mean a greater problem, and that's a way of sending a message. I think if we had the crab population that you're desiring, then the level of activity that the watermen are doing today would probably not be overfishing. But given the level of the crab population where it is, we do have overfishing.
Right.
And so what we need to do is get the population up so that we can restore the fishing levels.
Absolutely.
Excellent point. Further comment?
This
Matt, I'd like to follow up with Mr. Fox, if you may. A comment from Governor Kane, which is right in line with your comment. We know that a variety of environmental factors, degraded water quality and loss of submerged aquatic vegetation, in particular, have disrupted the balance of the bay ecosystem and likely contributed to the decline of the fishery. Both Virginia and Maryland are committed to improving the health of the bay's waters. We've taken bold steps to improve water quality and working to accelerate our efforts, which is right in line with your comment, Mr. Fox.
I mean, but we can't do anything about that as this commission. What we can do is talk to those folks down there who are members of the press, and maybe they will say something about it.
In concert with what our governor
exactly
said.
Exactly what the governor said, yeah.
Mr. Travelstead, further comment?
I think I've said enough.
Before we start the public comment, I would like to thank all of you for your kindness, for your control. I know this is a very emotional issue. As I've said in previous public hearings, we as a commission get no pleasure in being in a position to enact regulations that make it difficult for someone's livelihood. At this point, I would like to open the public hearing. Who's first? Yes, sir. Gentleman, Mr. Smith. Then Mr. Pride. Bob, you can start if you want to. Slide out or whatever.
Good afternoon, Mr. Smith.
Good afternoon, Smith.
My name is Ken Smith. I'm a Virginia waterman. Card number They're going, can't even mention, remember it. You got me so scared up here. Card number 5533. I'm opposed to new regulations on today's agenda. I ask that you table a decision on today's agenda for at least 1 month, or I will have to pursue other legal resources that I might have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Mr. Pride?
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner.
Good afternoon.
I'm Bob Pride. I'm from Pocosin, Virginia. And I'm not going to comment on the specific measures today because we know we're here to address the dramatic and apparent reductions in the blue crab stocks. We know you're going to consider some pretty serious measures here today. And whatever happens, we're going to have some pretty serious effects on some people's livelihoods. However, the overcapitalization and the associated overfishing is only part of the problem. Mr. Fox was talking about this a few minutes ago. We've got ecosystems and habitat issues that aren't being addressed by the commission and really can't be addressed by the commission. So all I want to do today is to try to get something else on the agenda that will help affect the spawning success and survival of crabs, and that's that water quality and habitat issue. And I would ask the commission respectfully to add an item to their measures when they get through today by way of an addendum or however you want to do it, a separate motion, to ask Governor Kane to convene a task force and consider what we want to do with our Chesapeake Bay. Now, where are we going to get the funding and the initiative to pursue these other problems? And without a meaningful plan and developing a meaningful plan and implementing that plan, we're not going to get anywhere. We're going to be, you know, taking little pot shots at this bigger problem, and we know it's a multi-billion-dollar problem, not a multi-million-dollar problem. We've been throwing millions at a $1 billion problem. And somehow we've got to get past the point we're at today so that we can restore this the bay and the heritage that we're all accustomed to seeing in our lives and leave the Chesapeake Bay a little better than we found it. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate the time.
For what it's worth, Bob, I do know the governor's significant dedication to the cleanup of the bay. It does take a lot of money, take a lot of resources. It's going to take a lot of catching up to undo the damage that's been done for so many years. So he will be receiving a report from the meeting, and that will be included in there.
Okay.
Thank you.
Certainly appreciate it. One of y'all would make it a point to ask him to convene some kind of task force to work on.
Thank you. Point made. Who's next, sir? Yes, sir. Good afternoon, Mr. Nobles.
Good afternoon. My name's David Nobles. I'm state president for Coastal Conservation Association. We have addressed a letter to Mr. Travelstead supporting the staff measures to take care of the crab problems that we have today. Years ago, when the commission was first put together, your responsibilities as a commission were to manage our marine resources for the benefits basically of commercial fishing. It was set up to make the commercial fishing a go here in the state of Virginia. And to that effect, we've all benefited from that. We've had cheap, inexpensive, and very accessible seafood for many years. And today we're at a crossroads where it's no longer that cheap, it's no longer that accessible, and we've got a crab population on the edge of demise. Your responsibility, as we see it, is to manage the resource. Coastal Conservation has a mission that we put the resource first. That's the first thing we consider. In the past, we've developed positions on different issues that ired both recreational and commercial fishermen. But our whole intent was to maintain our mission, and that's to look at the resource first. And that's what I charge you guys with today, is to look at the crab issue. It doesn't make any difference whether overfishing caused the demise, or whether water pollution, or the loss of seagrasses, even consumer demand. You know, we out here who buy these crabs are as much at fault for wanting more and more and more. What we have to look at is the crab. If we don't do something, and this population of shellfish is gone, what are the crabs going to do for a living then? What are we going to buy at the store when we want crab meat? We're going to be buying crabs from other places and other seafoods. So, and we already do that, I heard someone say in the back, that's very true. And that's because we put more and more pressure on our resources. Let's don't let the crab get to the point where our oysters are. In my opinion, we'll probably never see the oyster, native oyster, restored in Virginia unless something really drastic happens. You have the chance today to do something about the crabs. It's up to you. we certainly hope that you will take this in consideration, make the right decisions for the resource, and then in the future, hopefully the crabs rebound to where we have the healthy fishing population again. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nobles. Who's next? Ma'am?
Good afternoon,
ma'am.
My name is Ann Bender. I'm a commercial waterman, card number 008061. I'm opposed to new regulations on today's agenda. I would like you to table the agenda for at least 1 month. I'm a crab dealer and a bait dealer on the eastern shore of Virginia and Nassauwattocks, proprietor of Sand Dollar Seafood. I'm one of the few custom picking houses on the eastern shore. I am insulted by one of the statements that Virginia's quality of crab is so low. I take pride in this fishery. I take pride in the product that I give to my restaurants. I deal with the public on a daily basis. I do not think that we go into our local restaurants and ask, can I please have some imported crab meat? Basically, that's what I'm seeing is going to be happening. When you're talking about 609 people affected by an October closure and 409 affected by a November closure, looking at the dredge season affecting only 53 people. Or 53 boats. I would like to know if these effects are going to go into effect. Where is the compensation for our fishermen? Where is the if compensation is not available, then I think that maybe some of the gear licenses, some of the commercial registration fees need to be reduced for this fishery. I also think that in accordance with most other government entities, they wait 7 to 14 days before they act on a public hearing. I know this. I'm a public school teacher, have been for 17 years. I don't think that it's fair until you've heard everyone's opinions about this, whether it's in writing or vocally, to take a vote. So I do ask that you table this motion. And it also sounds from listening to Mr. Trowell said that there are still questions on what needs to be done with this fishery. And I don't think that there is any clear-cut answer. I think that, yes, there's a minimum safe level of crabs, but if you looked at his charts, his scatter plots, and his line graphs up here, it looks to me like there have been other years where there have been issues of a safe level, and maybe other things can be done other than cutting our fishermen out of this this fishery. If you're not willing to compensate them for any gear losses or gear reduction in price, what are they going to do if you cut them out of this? I know my husband, being a commercial fisherman, does not have a college education. His limits are, you know, he does have limits on what job he is able to get just having a high school diploma. And is he going to be able to make the same amount of money that he does as a commercial waterman? So just take into consideration that, like I said, I do take pride in the quality of the product that I produce. I deal with probably 20 people on a daily basis in the summertime, buying their crabs and dealing with them in the bait, and would like you just to think about that and maybe table your decision. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Who's next? Sir? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is James Close. After seeing all these charts and all the stuff that I've seen this evening, it just seems like we're being targeted as a dredger. Me as a commercial fisherman, I dredge crab for a living. I'm one of the 56 boats. What I have not seen on there on his charts is the peel industry. All that said right up there was nothing was ever seen about that. Well, I'm going to ask you all in y'all's minds today, how many soft crabs made it to market and went through the restaurants that never got a chance to spawn? I'm speaking for the whole room. We're the ones getting a bad rap. And I think it's time, really, people should know the truth. I might make it out of this parking lot today. There's either somebody whacking me, smacking me, or cussing me. But I've held my tongue too long. You want to kill any population, you kill the children. I have no more to say.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Powers.
Good afternoon. My name is Tom Powers. I'm the lone recreational representative on the Blue Crab Advisory Committee. People have come before you in the past and said it's a water quality problem. They've come up and said it's a predation problem, it's loss of SAB beds. I agree that a fraction of the problems with blue crabs is related to these issues. To me, the major problem is overcapitalization of the fishery. The data supporting this is shown in the graph I just handed you. From 1980 till 94, or probably before 80, the crab pot licenses were not based on the number of pots. You were given a license to work the gear by yourself or a different permit to allow a helper. In 1993, there were about 2,600 crab pot permits. Many of these were held by recreational crabbers who used them to avoid the two-pot limitations. After implementation of the Waterman's Card, a number of crab pot licenses dropped to about 1,800, where it's since stayed. In 1994 was the first year crab pots were licensed by number of pots. In that year, there were 571,700 permitted pots. In the next 5 years, accumulating with the February 1999 commission meeting, more permits were handed out, and the total number of permitted pots went up to 834,400. That's an increase of 262,000 pots, or 46% from the original number of permitted pots. In 1990, or 190,000 of that increase was peeler pots, and the remainder were hard crab pots. In 2001, the peeler pot license was reduced from 400 to 300, and the overall number of permitted pots was reduced to about 720,000, which is where it is today. If you want to reset the clock to 1994 on the number of permitted pots, then by all means, you should reduce the pots on a given license by 30% as recommended by the Blue Crab Advisory Committee. I would suggest that you make it effective June 1st so that the crabbers can get the excess gear out of the water. I'm confident that excess gear will not be wasted and still be put to use later in the season to replace lost or damaged pots. In my opinion, this will help in the long run of the effort control and pot tagging program that Commissioner Robbins is trying to put together. It will only be the effective way to control effort in the fishery. Unfortunately, the 30% gear reduction does not provide a calculable reduction in female harvest because of latent gear and other reductions will be required. I feel that the proper reduction is staff recommendation of the elimination of the dredge fishery and closure of the last month of the female season for female harvest. If you do not close the dredge fishery, it will mean a measure such as closing the entire fall season to female harvest. The latter is a waste of resource because in the early fall months, the crabs that they're harvesting are the ones that have already sponged out for that's the September, October. And then later in October is when you get this migration down the bay. Additionally, you will be shutting out about 600 crabbers to benefit the 53, most of which hold crab pot licenses anyway. Keeping the five pot license was supported. Jack, I think you missed on that one. It was supported by the Blue Crab Committee by a vote of like 8-2 or 8-3 at the committee meeting. Regarding that 3% harvest of the recreational fishery, only a small fraction of which is harvested by the 574 licenses amounting to 2,800 pots. In my opinion, reducing this insignificant part of the fishery will not provide any benefit to the overall recovery of the species. There are a number of gear types which the commission is not restricting, such as the 1,500 peeler pound licenses and the 360 crab scrape licenses. As a matter of fact, I think those licenses are still open and available. Recreational crab pots should be another that they don't restrict. Additionally, you have some issue of revenues from this. If you eliminate the five pot license, the Marine Products Board and the commercial license funds, both of which are basically broke, will be cut out another $21,000. on the 2 3/8 call rings, if it will apply to the recreational fishery, then there needs to either be a long phase-in for it or an extensive education program or both. Somehow you've got to get it out to the public that they've got to go out and change your pots and put a different call ring in it. Lastly, I would like to talk about one ecosystem issue that the Commission should be starting to think about. That issue is the effect of global warming on the SAV beds. The big eelgrass die-off a few years ago was not due to pollution. It was due to hot weather. The Commission should be funding research on the proper species to plant, transplant, and protocol for some type of SAV from South Carolina or other states south of us that can survive in our warmer summer waters. When I mentioned this to Ron Lischewitz last week, his eyes lit up, and he mentioned that he already had a species in mind that might be valuable to transplant from South Carolina up here. The Commission needs to help PIMS move forward with innovative programs to help maintain a viable ecosystem over the long term in spite of ecological changes that are beyond their control. Thank you.
Very timely. Today the Governor held his Commission on Climate Control meeting in Williamsburg, so seems like a lot of stars are lining up as far as thought process is concerned. Yes, sir. Back row, please. I'm sorry, ma'am. You come first, and then you, sir.
Thank you. I have to leave in a few minutes. Okay. Good afternoon. My name is Leanne Washington. I am the daughter of a deceased Virginia waterman and a lawyer.
And a wonderful waterman he was.
Thank you, sir.
You're quite welcome.
I've attended three or four of your meetings now, and I have heard a few statements that don't quite ring true. And I want to refer you to Section 28.2, 203.1 of the Virginia Code that sets forth what the Blue Crab Fishery Management Plan will include. And it says, the plan shall be designed to reverse any fishing practices, environmental stress, and habitat deterioration, negatively impacting the short and long-term viability and sustainability of the crab stock in Virginia waters. It says, the protection of spawning stock, nursery areas, and habitat shall be of prime consideration in the plan. It says, at a minimum, the plan shall include but not be limited to, number two, suggested measures to assure water quality conditions necessary for blue crab survival and reproduction, including identification of areas where water quality is such that onshore mechanisms for water quality protection are needed to protect and restore crab populations and habitat areas. So I don't remember who it was today who said we can't do anything about the water quality because we're the VMRC, and I beg to differ.
Mr. Fox right there.
Yeah. So, gentlemen, today I ask you to table a decision on today's agenda for at least 1 month, or I will have to assist these watermen in pursuing whatever other legal recourses they may have. And I thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Council. Yes, sir.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon, sir.
Gerald Parks, commercial fisherman, 2815. Everything's been spoke today about the dredging, the pot numbers, the tagging system. Nobody's talked about a busted crab. I spoke at the, not like this past meeting, but the meeting before the Crab Advisory Committee. Ron Liftus, he can back me up on this. 2.5 million crabs on each sponge. She sponges out three times a year. You're targeting the female crab? Let's ban the female crab. Let's ban the busted crab. 2.5 million on each egg. Each egg mass, Ron says, roughly 2% will live to be mature crabs. 1.5? 1% out of 2.5 million eggs. She's going to lay 7 million eggs in 1 year. And she's going to spawn out 7 million eggs, and 1% of 7 million is going to make it to the maturity. No one benefits from a sponge crab. We can't carry them across Maryland state line. Lacey Act. The only person benefits from them is a crab house. They bomb cheap, pick them cheap, sell them high. Y'all want to target the female crabs? Let's do something with, with the busted crab. The peelers, I peel a pot. Cut you back to 5 bushels to the boat. It's 200 peelers in a bushel. That's 1,000 to the boat. I get $1 a piece for them. That's $1,000 a day. Man can't make it on that. Don't need to work. If you're going to target something, consider that busted crab and consider consider slacking up on the peelers. It's a very simple solution. In 2 years' time, feed so many crabs, you have to hire a bulldozer to shove them back in the water.
That would be nice.
Do away with the busted crab and you'll see it.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Yes, sir. Then you... Good afternoon, sir.
Cecil Diamond from Reedville, Virginia. And I've been crabbing since 1968. I started crab dozing in 68. And I recently, in the last few years, have retired from it, but probably will never go another day in my life. But I don't think the crab dredge fishery has anything to do with the amount of crabs. When I started, I see boats catching 60 and 80 barrels a day. Now I see the limits reduced to 30 barrels, and then I see it reduced to 25 barrels, and then I see it reduced to 51 baskets. And the number of boats go from 250 boats to, you say, 53 today. What crabs these boats catch, I don't think has anything to do with the amount of crabs you have in the summertime, because it's so small now. And I wish y'all would take that into consideration and table it for 1 month and see what happens. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dameron. Sir.
Yes, sir. Greg Finney, Easter Shore. Crabber.
Sir.
I just think we're going to lose this fishery if we do much more than what we're doing now with it, because it's not the crabs on the verge of collapse, it's the industry. I've never seen it like this before. I don't think we can handle much more on the regulation end. Back in 1998, when most of these current restrictions were enacted, we predicted then that it wouldn't have much bearing on the population. And from what I've heard here today and what we've talked about in the meetings, we haven't. And the only result is the hardship on the crabbers, the full-time guys. The commission's going on the premise that the crabber is over-harvesting. I mean, we just don't see it going on out there every day. At certain times of the year, I can ride 7 miles either way in the bay, south or north, and not run into another person's gear. I think that overfishing is a myth. Since 1998, more than half the crabbers have dropped out. In my county, there's 3 crabbers under the age, full-time guys under the age of 55. 3. I listened to the minutes of the January meeting on the internet, and I know it's a scientific term, but I heard the words exploitation or exploited. I know they're using it for the number of crabs being caught, but I was a little offended by it, because I feel like we're exploiting nothing. I feel like that we're one group that may be subject to exploitation. I think we're over-regulated and few in numbers. I mean, there's so few of us left that we'll never be able to show an increase. We'll never be able to get back to the target year of 1991, because there's simply not enough crabbers to show that big increase. We want to work with a commission to try to come up with viable solutions to this problem. But, I mean, everything that I've read here, these things are totally unacceptable. The fishery cannot stand this. I would say, like I was talking with Ernie at the last meeting, We believe in 5 years there won't be a full-time guy left. I mean, that's a shame that it's headed this way. And at 30, what do you want to cut it 34% in 1 year? I mean, that's a drastic cut for one year's time. I ask that you table it for a while so we can discuss this further. We can work with Dr. Lipkus and come up with some more viable solutions that won't damage the fishery the way this will. Thank you.
Thank you. Who's next? Yes, sir. Good afternoon.
Afternoon. My name's Lee Smith. I'm a commercial fisherman. Proud commercial fisherman.
Proud to have you here, sir.
Thank you very much. My registration number is 4073. I'm opposed to all these new regulations that have been brought up today. I ask you to table this. It needs to be discussed further. We need to find a better solution. And if it's not tabled, I'm going to have to go back and take whatever legal means necessary to hopefully make this a better outcome for everybody in this room.
Thank you, Mr. Smith.
Thank you very much.
Who's next? Yes, sir. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. My name is Roger Parks. I am a Virginia waterman. My card number is 1599. And I am opposed to the new regulations on today's agenda. I ask you to table today's agenda for at least 1 month, or I will have to pursue whatever other resource I might have. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir. And then...
How are you
today? Fine. Yourself?
Fine. I'm Jim Waterfield. I'm Virginia Waterman, card number 5189. I'm opposed to the new regulations on today's agenda. I ask you to table today's agenda for at least 1 month, or I will have to pursue whatever other legal recourse I might have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Waterfield. Yes, sir. And then you, Captain Bob. Sorry.
Hi. I'm Joe Palmer.
Hi, Joe.
I'm Waterman, Virginia Beach, card number is 2114. I've listened to what everybody had to say, listened to Mr. Travelstead, and I've come to two conclusions. First, there's going to be a catch reduction whether we like it or not. And the second one is that everyone who's warm in this room, including myself, is going to take a hit. And there's a way to make it a little less painful for us. I can see gear reductions coming. Let's make it a decent gear reduction, 10%. I don't think very many people are going to feel a 10% gear reduction. Second thing is something that's a little more painless. Let's set a certain number of crabbers that we want out in the bay. And everybody who's an active crabber keeps their license until the day they die or the day they stop working. But the last day you work is the last day that license exists until the state hits its target number. When they hit that target number, just like a commercial hook and line license, they hold a lottery. And it's exclusive to people from Tangier because that's all they do is crab. So let them have any license they want. But for the rest of us, the rest of the world out there, we'll say 1,500 licenses. At the end of the year, you look and say there's 1,490 licenses. You put 10 licenses up for lottery for the next year. You hold your target number. It reduces gear out there. I also don't have a problem with a license going from a father to a son. That one doesn't go up for lottery. Dad passes on, or dad's retiring, he wants to give it to his son. Do that and keep it in the family. Third thing is, if you have a license and you want that license fished, you have to be on the boat. I'm opposed to a businessman having a license and taking his waterman's card and his license and giving it to somebody and saying, here, fish for me. You take part of it and I get part of it. Let the waterman get the money. Let the waterman work. Another thing is, I agree with the cull rings statewide. I don't have a problem with that. That's going to reduce the catch, and that's not going to really hurt anybody in this room. And the last thing is a decent, responsible catch limit. When everybody's catching a lot of crabs, that's when the price goes down. and we can't get rid of them. 3 years ago, we had a wonderful spring, and prices went down to $8 a bushel, and you couldn't get rid of them. Make it a decent limit, one that will hold the prices up for us, and yet make sure the picking houses and the crab houses all have plenty of crabs to sell. That's all I have to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Palmer. Appreciate your comments. Yes, sir, Captain Bob. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I don't envy you. The thing is, as a citizen of Virginia, I want to voice my opinion on the crab situation. If you, as the regulators, don't regulate, there won't be many crabs left. And I think you're doing a good job, and we have to learn to operate under the law. And you are the law. So let's get on with it. The world is turning, and tabling and all of this. You've got a program. It's been well studied. It's been well thought out. And the science behind it is good. So let's go with it.
Thank you, Captain Jensen. Yes, sir.
Good afternoon, sir. Commercial crabber from Tanger Island, and my number is 0608. I've been crab dredging since 1989 I started, and I've been looking at this, you know, this chart. I wrote a letter in March to, I don't know, you might have got one, Dean Dowers. My name's Dean Dowers. And I wrote a letter, and I suggested from the middle of crab dredging, from the middle of December to the middle of March, a 10-barrel limit and enclosure of the hard bottom. And but what I was suggesting, if they close crab dredging, I mean, we live on an island, and you talk about 50 some boats, and I guess up there is around 20 boats. You're talking about families, you're talking about bank notes. People's got bank notes. We got different things. I mean, we can't just close the industry and say, well, go on about your business. I mean, what about the people that you put out of work? I mean, you're got to is crabs. I mean, I know we need crabs, but Jack Travel said here, he said talk like winter crabs. We got a very good price for winter crabs this past winter. We got $40 a bushel, you know, and that's why crabs are good. And the spring, and the 2 years ago, we were crabbing down here to Cape Charles, getting $10 a bushel. You know the reason why? Too many. If there are too many crabs, you get nothing for them, nothing. You can't get nothing for your stuff. And if all these crabs come back, like you said, you want them back, we can't make no money. It only people it pleases. It pleases the people don't work underwater. They see abundance of crabs, and that's all they think they ought to do. They just have their bay full of crabs, and the problem is not like that. It don't work like that. But I believe if you put a bushel, I didn't want to, you know, I might step on some toes there, but I think if you put a 25 bushel year round, or something like that, to keep the market from getting flooded with crabs, we'll all get a decent price. We'll be all able to work, because working underwater, you need to work at least, if you're a full-time crabber, you need at least work 11 months a year. I ain't got no college education. I can't just drop my job and just go on and move to another job. I can't do that. Up in Tangier, I know there's right many, you probably heard, there's right many people working on tugboats and different things. You know how many is on the waiting list up there to get on there? 100. Now, the tugboats can't hire everybody and everything. And we need to work. I got two children. One 16 and one 11, a boy and a girl, one 16 and one 11. I need at least $2,500 a month just to keep my household going. Now, where is I going to get that $2,500 a month from the end of October till the 1st of April? Any of you going to give it to me? Huh? If you will. If you will, I'll be glad to quit.
Mr. Dyes?
Yeah?
What we're hoping is that the measures that we take will require you not to work as hard during the winter months and maybe pick up in the spring months.
I know it, Mr.
That's the basically...
Yeah, I know that.
So that it's more productive and a less labor-intensive and less fuel-intensive...
Yeah, I know that. But what I'm saying is, don't you want to stop crab dredging altogether and warn that up here?
Yes, sir.
Yeah? If the crab dredging stopped, how was I going to make a living?
My position is this. If we do away with crab dredging and eliminate the loss of those females, you'll be in a better position. Thank you.
I mean, how was I going to be in a better position if I'm not working?
I'd like to if I could. The bottom line is the measures that we take during the reduction of the crab dredge fishery will increase the number of crabs that will be available for you during the spring and summer.
Yeah, the prices will be cheap. The prices will be down. We won't be able to make no more money than we're making. And we'll be out of work three times more.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you, Mr. Dyes. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. You should have hollered out.
That's okay. My name is Amy Firth. I'm a waterman's daughter. I'm a waterman's wife, and I have a commercial card. My number is 3881. I've been coming to these meetings now since y'all wanted to say that the Hall Seiners were tearing up the eelgrass. I'm tired of sitting in this room.
We did hear something about habitat being a problem from the lawyer a little while ago, and
I'm tired of
not addressing that.
I'm tired of listening to the watermen always are the ones doing everything. I have a daughter going to school for the same thing. I got a whole bunch of stuff here that I got Mr. Travelstead's email for because I didn't do it right the first time. So I'm going to call him on the telephone. But right now I want to talk to you about these regulations on the dredging. My dad is 71 years old. He started dredging when there were millions of oysters in the James River and millions of crabs in the Chesapeake Bay. He gave me some information that I'm sure y'all don't know because you're not 71 years old and you didn't start when he did at 11. If you cut out winter dredging and you cut it out completely, it's not going to make one, I can't say all the words he said, it's not going to make one bit of difference because the waste that I read in the email that I got from whoever sent it to me from here, because I'm not very good on the computer. The waste on the dredge crab has nothing to do with whether that female crab is going to make it or not. Once that crab gets in the dredge and it's on the boat, they know they can't keep a busted sook. There isn't any busted sooks in the wintertime. Without a jimmy crab, cutting out the female crab, girls don't get pregnant without the man. And the crab pot limit and the peeler pot limit, if you cut the peeler pot limit in half or the bushel limit in half, like the other thing was like 6 bushels, is that what it was? If you do that and you put a coal ring in a peeler pot and you put bigger coal ring in the crab pot, the crabs are going to get out. They get out with already the two we have. We don't need another one of those. And I do agree that you need to do something. I just don't know what the something is.
Thank you, ma'am. Yes, sir.
My name is John Tubbs. I'm a commercial fisherman.
What was your last time I didn't catch you?
Tubbs, T-U-B-B-S.
That's the same as Tubbs.
My card number is 5028.
I'm opposed to all these regulations. And number one, commercial fishermen don't go on unemployment, and they don't draw government subsidies. They pull their weight and get through just like it is until times come up. You know, and the only thing this is going to do, these regulations are going to do, is put hardworking fishermen out of work. That's all. That's it. You're going to close down the seasons in the fall of the year. That's when all the true commercial fishermen are working. All the weekend warriors have done gone back to their regular jobs and pulled off all their gear by then. You're only hurting real, true commercial fishermen by doing these regulations right here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Lipschitz?
Thank you, Commissioner Bowman and Commissioners. I want to read two statements to you. One is the formal VIMS position on this, communicated to you by Dean Director Wells, and the other one is a second statement for me as a VIMS scientist. So the VIMS position, as voiced recently by Governors Kane and O'Malley, the current situation with the blue crab and fishery in Chesapeake Bay is disheartening. The information on the status of the spawning stock derived from the VIMS trawl survey, on the status of the population from the VIMS and Maryland DNR winter dredge survey, and on the fishery from VMRC and DNR landings clearly point to a serious problem that must be solved immediately to avert a potential population collapse. Consequently, the Institute is in full support of the need to implement fishery regulations that are ecologically sound. We realize that any new regulations will be a burden on the commercial watermen. We are hopeful and confident that they'll serve to provide stability and promote sustainability for the fishery in the long term. That's the official VIMS position. Now, if I could just make a statement as a VIMS scientist, I know that the blue crab biologically faces many obstacles, not just fishing pressure. Its primary nursery habitat, seagrass, has declined sharply, as you know. Its secondary nursery habitats, salt marsh fringe coves, and shorelines have been degraded by shoreline development and pollution. Some of its natural predators, such as striped bass and Atlantic croaker, have shown a resurgence, as have some non-native predators, witness the blue catfish. Consequently, I ask that in the coming year, the Commission staff join with VIMS to formally pursue ecosystem-based management of the blue crab, such as predator control, habitat restoration, as a holistic approach to restoration of the blue crab stock and fishery, and as a way to alleviate the need to focus solely on the working watermen when faced with a fishery crisis.
Thank you, Dr. Lipschitz. As you well know, Rom, we have started down the path as far as the predation issue is concerned. You may or may not be aware that we have talked with Dr. Orth after he got back from his surgery pertaining to the seagrass issue, especially in the area around Tangier Sound, as to the degradation there and some matters that can be looked at as far as that's concerned. So your point is well made as far as your last paragraph is concerned, and we thank you. Yes, sir.
Good afternoon. My name is Ken Diggs. I'm a Virginia waterman. My card number is 1455. I'm opposed to the new regulations on today's agenda. I ask you to table today's agenda for at least 1 month, or I will have to pursue whatever other legal resource I might have. Thank you.
Thank you for perfecting your standing. I appreciate it. Mr. Nixon.
I'm Peter Nixon. I'm a long-term member of the CRAB Committee. I wear several other hats, but I'm here today just in that respect and speaking as a crabber. I called Jack yesterday and asked him in the afternoon what Maryland had come up with, and he hadn't heard yet. It was a little bit too early. And as I hung up the phone and walked back in the shop, who was on the radio but Tennessee Ernie Ford singing 16 tons. That's the God's honest truth. I noticed Jimmy Carter in the news lately, doing some negotiating of some sort. And when I heard of the proposals that came out of the Colonial Beach Agreement, I thought for sure that President Carter had been doing the negotiating, because the deal was so bad for Virginia, I couldn't believe it. But No, I found out it wasn't President Carter, but it was our own bunch of rookie negotiators from Richmond. To fail to understand and recognize the intent of Maryland's present and past position, which is to really cut Virginia completely out of female crab harvest, especially sponge crab harvest, lends itself to being blindsided by it, and this is what happened to our administrators. They were tricked, and they continue to believe this latest solution is going to be the end-all, cure-all of the low crab harvest situation or low crab population situation. It's just more of the same old. That's all we've heard for the last number of years out of the Bi-State Blue Crab Committee, and anything that comes out of up north is save the females, save the females. Don't do anything else. Just save the females. It's theory. It's not reality. It's not working. That's why we're here today, because it hadn't worked in the past. It's not going to work now. The main disconnect between Maryland's fisheries and Virginia's is Maryland's fishery, the value of Maryland's fishery, is concentrated mainly on high market male crabs. They're right in the middle of that Washington, D.C., Baltimore hub of activity with high dollar salaries, and they concentrate on a high dollar male crab for those markets. Their percentage of female harvest is going up to almost 50%. It used to be 10 or 15, maybe 20%, mainly because they're harvesting more and more of their jimmies out of the population. So therefore, the percentage has to go up. But nobody in Maryland is saying don't harvest any jimmies. They're saying don't harvest any females. That percentage falls worse on us than it does them. The percentage in dollar-wise of the female harvest in Maryland is probably down at the lower end of 25% of their value of their harvest or more. In Virginia's, it's a whole lot higher. Dollar and cents-wise, it's going to cost us more. These proposals, and I'm talking about the Colonial Beach proposals, these closures, these seasonal closures and dredge closures, is largely going to affect full-time watermen in Virginia. They'll affect very few watermen in Maryland. They'll affect some at the lower end of the bay in Somerset County and Smith Island and those fellows like that. But most of the Maryland fishery, contrary to what most folks would believe, is a part-time summer fishery. Now, these are big boats with thousands of pots, but they time up in September. After Labor Day's over, that market is gone. But they've already made their money. They catch hundreds of bushels of crabs all summer long, and they get good money for them. They don't need to work after that. Our fishery in Virginia is different. We pick at it a little here and pick at it a little there and pick at it a little here, and by the end of the year, we might have enough money to gear up and make it through the following spring. If you take the last couple of months off the season and you do something harmful to dredging, there's a whole bunch of us that aren't going to be around to see all this abundance of great crabs the following spring. This one fellow from Tangier got up and talked about banknotes. That's exactly the conversation I was having with Jack yesterday. I've spent a pile of money trying to see this area Kansas oyster and spat on shell and this, that, and the other go forward. I haven't made any of it back, and it's all on a note. And I don't know what I'm going to do with that this winter. John Graham's dad said to me the other day, he says, "How do I tell the city of Hampton I'm only going to pay my taxes for 6 months this year, you know, because I'm not going to do anything the other 6 months. We're going to close the plant. How am I going to tell my banker or my insurance broker? I'm just not going to pay that last 6 months, and I'm not going to pay my bank accounts or any of the fees or anything like that for 6 months." All this fixed overhead continues. We were, and I was encouraged. I've been complaining about what's been going on as far as harvest for at least 15 years. I was over here in 1993 with TV cameras, all the newspaper folks and everything complaining about the alarming explosion I saw in the number of peeler crabbers that we had moving from up the bay down into the James River system. I saw at that time it was just going to be too much. And it's taken from then to now, and the prospect of all these other regulations piled on top of us, that a lot of other folks, and I'm hearing it in this room tonight, I heard it at two or three crab committee meetings, that everybody else is starting to figure out the same thing. But none of this has been addressed through this Colonial Beach Agreement. If we're going, you know, and we were on the right track. We were heading down the road. And I almost felt like this a few years ago, and then we were all interrupted and set back again by this nitwit 15% bi-state blue crab committee reduction, 8-hour days, this, that, and the other. And that was real effective. Now we have to have 34% on top of that. What is that? Do the arithmetic. That's getting close to, you know, 40%. You have 15% of what you had, and then another 34% or less than that. It's probably really 50%. We had a good set of proposals come out of the CRAB committee the other night. A lot of people didn't agree about them, but it was the best we could do to try to address all of the facets of the crabbing industry. We have more coming on. We discussed how to try to handle this peeler issue. You need to reduce the number of peeler pots. You need to reduce the number of hard crab pots, at least for the short term, and do these now. Now, this 2009, I made the suggestion in that meeting that we do this 30% reduction and do it now. Hopefully, we'll get some credit towards this female harvest thing. The same thing with the cull rings. Every time something goes through this CRAB committee meeting, by the time it gets up here, it's diluted. But there's other things at the end of it that end up being worse. I sometimes wonder why we even waste our time going through that procedure. The recommendations from the CRAB committee will do what needs to be done and will be much better than the politically correct statements that came out of the governor's meeting. To do what the mandate says and not do the others will put us back. That pie in the sky, all those crabs are going to be there in the spring. And I had this argument with Dr. McConaughey. Got to save the crabs in the fall. Why not save some of all of them all year long? No, you got to save those ones in the fall. Well, if you save them in the fall and you don't do something about the whole gang coming down here in the spring, and don't you think that all that Maryland bunch
will
be
gang?
Down?
You keep referring to the upriver crabbers and the whole gang.
We have a whole bunch of crabbers in this state and Maryland. And this started really with all the Maryland boats back when we came up with the 51 bushel limit.
Right.
That in order to take advantage of the warmer water temperatures at the lower end of the bay, the whole bay, anybody that has a boat that's big enough and feels like coming to the lower end of the bay comes down and crabs.
They shouldn't be able to do that if they have a Virginia license?
No, wait just a minute. You haven't let me finish. Okay. They come down there and they crab in the sanctuary.
Okay.
That's where they crab. That's the problem with it. Now, what's going to happen is, if you don't do something with that situation in the spring, you've not saved any crabs. Because I guarantee you, I think 75 Maryland boats have the potential to come down here in the spring. You don't think they'll come down here in the spring this year if they think there's a whole load of crabs that they let loose in the fall, and we did too? They're going to fill up every slip and everything there is from Lynn Haven to Hampton. And it'll be a waste, and all we will have done is put ourselves in a bad position for 2 or 3 weeks of harvest in the spring. I'm tempted to say just skip all these other things if you're going to pass the two closures. That's really all we have to do, right, Jack? Just pass the two closures and we'll be there. Close dredging and close 2 months, you know, the month at the end of the season.
Not if you include recoupment.
We already accomplished 11%, and I cannot understand why early in all this discussion in these crab meetings, everything that was stressed was exploitation rate, exploitation rate, exploitation rate. If we reduce pots by 30%, that's reducing the exploitation rate, but we get no benefit for it. We say, oh, he just said it. Recoupment is going to be too much. You can't get an equal value of pot reduction for harvest reduction because of recoupment. We've been reducing pots in this state for the last 5 years, and I can tell you one thing, my catch per unit effort has not gone up. It's gone the other way. So, and the other thing is, I don't see how you folks in this room, I've been dealing with this for 6 months now, other than Dr. McConaughey and Commissioner Robbins, I don't see how you can get your brains around this amount of information in a week. We were forced to make a bunch of decisions the other day in 5 hours with only hearing about them in one day. The thing I'm going to ask you folks to do is put off making any decisions on this, these two proposals for closures for 30 days, and pass the recommendations of the CRAB committee, not staff. And that was 2 2 3/8 call rings in the crab pots in addition to the rings that are in there now. That additional was left out of there. The 30% pot reduction now. These things need to be done this summer, not this fall. We can't let everybody continue doing whatever we've been doing wrong all the way through the summer right now and expect to get any benefit from any of this next spring. Jack made the comment to me that if we don't see any beneficial results from this next year, we're going to be faced with this closure again next fall. So if we don't do something proactive other than these two Colonial Beach recommendations, we're going to be right back here next fall with another dredge closure addition and another fall closure of the crab pot fishery. Thank you.
Pete, I need to address a couple things if I could. I take significant umbrage to the comment about rookie negotiators and a politically correct something to do from the Colonial Beach Agreement. The rookie negotiators that you were talking about, what started that all out, just so that we're clear on the record, was a panel that was composed of the best scientists that we could find from Maryland, Virginia, North Carolina, and South Carolina. I don't consider them rookies. I really don't. We really tried to put together a panel that could look at what was right, what was wrong, what was indifferent, what needed to be changed. What came out of that review panel was a distillation of what we thought were the best ideas. We discussed those extensively with certain members of the government before it got to Governor Kane and Governor O'Malley. Wasn't intended to be politically correct. Let me finish.
Are you talking about the Regulations Review Committee or just the Colonial Beach Agreement?
I'm talking about the Regulation Review Committee that came up with the statement that I have here, joint statement from the governors. It was basically something that was distilled from the best science that we had available in talking with members of the industry. Let me finish.
No one in the industry included in any of that, and that was some of my biggest complaint. The first time that I ever got any copy or any little bit of information about that was the day before the commission meeting. That the proposals were made by Jack back in, what was it, February or March.
You may not have been talked to, but I'm certain there are other people in industry that were talked to and was discussed. That's where the wastage issue came about the winter dredge fishery. I personally took time to talk to members of industry. And also you made the comment that you couldn't see how anybody other than Dr. McConaughey and Associate Robbins could get their hands around it in a week. Mr. Bowden's been fishing all his life. You don't think he can get his hands around it? I've been working here not just for no other reason, for 16 years. And these other people have been associated with the maritime industry for a long time, for various reasons, recreational and commercial. So I take extreme exception to basically isolating the rest of the commission as being someone that doesn't know what they're doing. I'm not finished. We dedicate our lives to do the best job we possibly can up here. And sometimes it's believed to be right, and sometimes it's believed to be wrong. But by gosh, we do try to do the best job we possibly can, as does the governor and secretary and everybody else involved in this process. It's not easy. You mentioned banknotes. I've mentioned it before. I have struggled long and hard to try to determine what we can do for those people that are most affected by the decisions that we make as far as alternate ways of doing some type of business that would improve the water quality, that would improve the seagrass. That's why we're having discussions with VIMS pertaining to predation and seagrass restoration. So I understand where you're coming from, but please At the same time, consider some of the things that we're not operating in a vacuum. I can assure you we're not. We're trying to do our very best for what's best for the fishery. And I just
don't think that you're giving this particular issue enough deliberation.
And that's your opinion, I just don't think that.
You know, I couldn't make this decision in an afternoon sitting in this room if I hadn't participated, you know, to the extent that I had. And I wouldn't expect anybody else to.
Thank you, Pete. I appreciate it. Who's next? Mr. Graham. And then the nice lady there and the gentleman in the back.
Good afternoon, Mr. Commissioner, members of the commission.
Mr. Graham.
My name is Johnny Graham. My company, Graham & Rollins, located in Hampton, has been in operation since 1942, processing blue crab meat. We are the last remaining plant in Hampton, which was once the crab capital of Virginia. Over the many decades, our operation has witnessed and managed to navigate through many tumultuous periods of instability and uncertainty. The course that was announced last Tuesday by Governor Kane and Governor O'Malley is unprecedented. Since 1991, when the blue crab stock began the downward cycle, my father and I have served on every panel and committee ever created to foster the blue crab stock. Without question, the blue crab stock is as bad as either of us have ever witnessed at this point. As the market demands for the various types or stages of blue crab changes, so do the habits and routines of the everyday waterman. The market for the blue crab now is not the same as it was 25 years ago, and therefore the effort and daily routine of the waterman is not the same. The management strategies and regulations that have evolved over the last 20 years have impacted and influenced watermen to change gear type and location of effort. The spawning sanctuary is a perfect example. What was once 42 square miles is now over 900. It has a dramatic influence on watermen and their ability to harvest crabs in the area that they have traditionally harvested. Another example is a shift in the soft crab fishery, which occurred in the mid-1990s. And this number is probably not exact, but it's an overwhelming number. But an additional 600 licenses were issued over 3 years to peeler potters, as this industry proliferated because of the market value of the soft crab. Although we share the Chesapeake Bay and its resources, Virginia and Maryland have two different, dynamically different fisheries. Most noteworthy, their female crab harvest historically is less than half of Virginia's. So therefore, a 34% reduction in female harvesting is not shared equally amongst each jurisdiction. Virginia crabbers are burdened and penalized. Virginia crabbers got the short end of this deal. We share this resource, and recent landings data convey an annual equivalence in pounds, although their distribution of male and female is different from ours. If the harvest levels are equivalent, then the suffrage should be equal amongst both jurisdictions. The laws pertaining to the harvesting of crabs within the two states are drastically different by comparison. License holders in Maryland have almost double the gear in Virginia. Currently, Maryland has no limit on the amount of crabs anyone can harvest. Virginia crabbers can harvest 51 bushels. Virginia has plans to implement a pot tagging program to grasp what many feel has plagued our ability to manage the amount of gear in the watershed. Maryland, in most recent deliberations, has not mentioned any such a program or any intentions for gear reductions in the near future. How can any jurisdiction manage a fishery of any type without mechanisms in place to manage the amount of gear in the water? I don't have a sure number, but I'm saying within two handfuls are the numbers of summonses that have been issued in the two states for overfishing of gear in the watershed. It is not something that's being enforced. It cannot be enforced, and there's overfishing going on. Last Wednesday night, the day after the joint announcement at Colonial Beach, Virginia Blue Crab Subcommittee members met to discuss a menu of options addressing the 34% reduction in female harvest. As Pete Nixon mentioned earlier, it was the first time that I had seen these methods. We were discussing closing a fishery which has been in existence for almost a century. The winter dredge fishery has been a contentious and frowned upon fishery for decades. However, after much deliberation, a proposed regulatory action addressing minimizing the waste and degradation by closing off areas with hard bottom was endorsed. Closing down the entire fishery was not the desire of the committee, nor the few watermen that were in attendance. Although the closure of the dredge fishery was to be temporary, historically, when regulations are adopted, they become permanent. The proposals which were brought forward last Wednesday night will fall short of the 34% the governor has requested. I can only hope that the commission, you all, will consider the measures we have taken already this year and some of the measures that we've continued to discuss that are coming forward. And we will continue to implement for the health and the betterment of the species and the blue crab stock. More time is needed before the impacts of recent and forthcoming regulations can be effectively measured. The position the governor has chosen may in fact dismantle what is left of already a depleted fishery. It will assuredly reduce the effort to a part-time fishery. Crabbing is the last fishery left in this bay which can sustain a year-round livelihood for most of these watermen. They have bills that come in 12 months out of the year, as I do, and regulating this fishery so that we're working on a 6 and 7 month window of opportunity is not going to be enough to sustain it. It's just, you know, it's a part-time industry as it is right now for the most part, and this is going to put the nail in the coffin and is going to make it a permanent part-time fishery. And we cannot have that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Graham.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon,
ma'am. Wendy Turner, Glens Island. I'm thinking I'm kind of getting gist from people about Maryland. Are we talking about Maryland? I think what the guys probably are trying to get across is maybe the licenses being sold to out of state should be eliminated. Okay. Because Marylanders are down fishing in Gwen's Island right now as we speak. So if they've got all their crabs and everything they want to keep in Maryland and it be there for them, then maybe they should stay home. Maybe that's the big thing. They're also out there at dredge season, too. So everyone wants to talk about the 53. You know, I mean, I feel if we want to protect Virginia crabs, and then it should be Virginia working the crabs, not people who can buy from Carolina and Maryland. My next thing is we're talking about doing the reduced bushel limit. That's fine, hunky-dory, but the problem with that is all the crabbers in the back know, you always hear, we are getting plenty of crabs from Carolina, so they'll just go somewhere else. The lower bushel limit is not going to make our price stay up. That's just a fact, because they will just go and get them from Maryland or from Carolina. So, and the only other thing I had to say is, I feel we're doing a pot reduction on everyone. It doesn't matter to the people who are out here part-time. I had a guy tell me he crab pots for his ice cream money. Being the lady I am, I didn't punch him in the nose because I'm crab potting 12 months out of the year or crab dredging or peeler potting for mortgage money, not ice cream money.
Thank you, Ms. Burr. Who's next?
My name is Leroy Turner from Gwen's Island.
I'm Mr. Turner.
I hope you all listen to some of us guys say. But all these guys in this room here today, they're all full-timers. We start our boat every day. If you want to save the crabs, take these guys and get off trucks, park a truck to go peeler potting, and park a truck for the first run of crab potting. Take them off the water. Let us keep working. That's the only thing I got.
Thank you, Mr. Turner. Yes, sir.
Here. Yeah, it's up there. Just going to just stop. It's right there. Double click on that one.
There you go.
Okay, thanks.
There's no scale on there. If we were, say, I'm sorry. My name is Kenneth Carpenter. I'm from Suffolk, Virginia. I'm not a waterman. I'm a land surveyor. I kind of relate to them in the sense that I've gone through the weather, hard winters, hard summers. It's hot. You get weary out there doing things, and we have to do some tedious stuff at times in surveying. And then I went with someone from Tangier Island scraping and going out on the boat, and I see that their life is pretty tough at times going against the weather. And I just I'm here as a friend of the watermen, and I just like to appeal for compassion on the watermen. That's my main gist. I don't know what all is going with the crabs, but I did see this crab the other week, and took a picture of it, and I was thinking, well, you know, if we were, say, like 1,000 years from now and looking back, and you say, well, was that a big man or was that a little crab? And, you know, so it's a little crab, and you think about that. I'm told that that crab is an adult crab. It won't get any bigger. Now, is that a dwarf crab, and is that unusual? Is this a crab that has, if you played Monopoly before, it has the get-out-of-jail-free card, but through the coal rings, it can come out, and it's gonna produce other, probably small crabs. And I've heard someone say that the scientists argue that that's not really the case. Well, I find that strange if that's not the case, that little crabs can get out and produce other little crabs. Then what are you going to have after a while if all you keep on letting little crabs out? And I think about on the land, you have animals, and you breed animals, either big ones for bigger animals. If you want tall basketball players, get tall men to marry tall women. You know, and you're not changing genes.
Can I ask you what your point is? I'm not following you.
Well, the coal rings allow for smaller crabs.
Okay.
That's just my opinion.
Okay.
And then my next point is about the restrictions. Just from my point of view, I just look and say, well, you know, you keep adding restrictions and you say, well, this is going to, help increase the population. If that doesn't work, then we'll try more restrictions. That just seems like to me that you keep adding restrictions. What then? What's next? How about if this doesn't work, then what? And as a result of that, you have watermen that, such as on Tangier Island, that have just about nowhere to go unless they just leave the island and leave their way of life. Is there any searching for compensation for these people like they've done for farmers? When they restrict farmers in the past, they would help the farmer to make a living. You know, you can't do this much crabbing or this much fishing, then what can you do for them? I would just appeal to you that you search out something, some way to help these hardworking men and women, whoever are attached to this industry. That's my point. That's all.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Carpenter. Appreciate it. Yes, sir.
How y'all doing?
Good. Yourself?
I'm Dennis Dalheim from the coast of Virginia.
Dennis?
Card number 1212. I'm opposed to the new regulations on today's agenda. I ask you to table today's agenda for at least 1 month, or I will have to pursue whatever other legal recourses I might have. On another note, you said here I am one of the 52 drudges. Economics fuel is going to take care of drudging. You all can sleep at night. You don't have to close it down. Let me be the judge of when I can make it and when I can't make it. That's all I ask of you.
Thank you, Mr. Dalheim. Yes, sir.
Hi,
How y'all doing today?
Good, sir.
My name's Charles Waddell.
That's
my number's 2803. I'm a James River fisherman. I'm opposed to all the laws, all the rules, what's going to be opposed today, the regulations. And I ask that you put it on the table for 1 month so that we can try to get something worked out of this. I heard some comments today about, you know, peeler potting, hard crab potting. All the laws was being passed. I mean, what's been brought up? I haven't heard anything about a limit. I've heard it on hard crabs, but not peelers. I live right there, Pagan River. Crab, seen the good times, seen the bad. I watch what peelers have done to the Pagan River. Go up there with 200 crab pots, catch 25 bushels of jimmies. Now you go up there at 200 crab pots, catch 4 or 5 jimmies. So, you know, I'd like for y'all to take in consideration on the laws that y'all, what y'all going to try to pass. And, you know, some other things need to be addressed and as far as, like, the water quality and whatnot. And thank y'all.
Thank you. What else? Yeah. Public hearing.
My name is Ken Diggs, Jr. I'm Virginia Waterman, card 5574. I'm opposed to all the regulations on today's agenda. I ask that you table today's agenda for 1 month, or I'll have to pursue whatever other legal recourse I might have. And I'm, like, I just bought, I invested money, I'm 20 years old. I just invested money into a crab pot license and crab pots and stuff. So now all that is probably, when you talk about getting rid of the part-timers and stuff, since I haven't held my license for years, does that mean it's just no good? My investment is right now.
I have not opened my mouth one bit about getting rid of anybody. Oh. Not at all.
I just got to take care of myself anyway. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Good afternoon. I'm Ty Farrington, Virginia commercial fisherman, number 1695. I'm opposed to the new regulations on today's agenda. I ask that you table the agenda for at least 1 month, or I will have to pursue whatever other legal recourse I might have. Okay. Now, one question I had was, what fall closure did Maryland say they had in mind?
Jack, can you give the specific?
October 23rd.
October 23rd.
October 23rd. All right, well, the female migration basically starts by the water temperature dropping,
mm-hmm.
the climate.
Mm-hmm.
By October 23rd, their female migration is gone. They've uncaught everything that's coming out of there because they're up north. That's already gone coming to Virginia. So they've caught what they can catch by then, and what they're closing down, they ain't losing nothing. So you close us down, we don't get our part. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Farrington. Anyone else? Yes, sir.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. I'm Nelson Ortiz. I'm from Hampton. I'm a recreational fisherman. We've been dancing around a little bit about water quality here, and I've been attending this meeting since January, and it's kind of been the same sequence. We talk about SAV beds, talk about water quality, we talk about sewage. But we don't talk about the one item that's free that can clean the bay, the M word, menhaden. Okay? Along with all this that we're doing, we need to look at menhaden and free them up so they can do their job. If we free them up, then predators will have something to eat and we'll have crabs. Otherwise, if we don't do this, the SAB beds won't grow. These crabs that you're going to try out there on the bay will scatter, be out in the open. And all we're going to do is grow some tasty morsels for all these predators to eat. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ortiz. Who's next? Mr. Jenkins?
It's getting long, gentlemen. I know y'all are worried by now. Doug Jenkins. I'm a waterman. My card number is 0829, last four. And I also request that you table this for another month. I may have to look in some other resources. But I think the main thing today to clear all of y'all's minds up and come to a good decision, if you want to send somebody a message, send the governor and all the politicians a message today and table this thing for a month. Because they haven't done their job. I'm not saying the one there is not doing his, but I know the ones in the past didn't do theirs, both Virginia and Maryland, and the politicians, because we would have had a clean and healthy bay. I started working on cleaning the bay with the steering committee of the first one in Chesapeake Bay back in 1983. And we had the means and the know-how to clean the bay up, and it was supposed to be cleaned up by 1990. They postponed from 1990 to year 2000. In year 2000, they postponed it to 2010. So if you want to send a good, clear message, send it today. You have the opportunity to do it, each one of you up there. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jenkins. Public hearing is now closed. Matters before the commission for discussion and action. Mr. Bowden.
I am a full-time working waterman. My family lived on Chincoteague before Virginia was a state. We were still a colony. I'm the last working waterman in my family. It's sad after 300 years. I'm the last. It just become impossible to make a living. You know, who pays the price for what's going on? That's the important part. Is it the striped bass fishermen? They're having the best recreational fishery ever, all up as far as New England. So they're really not paying anything. We're managing this fishery for a trophy fishery. We're not managing it for maximum sustainable yield in any way. We're managing the fishery so we can, every year, our state record drops like a fly. It just, you know, the fish are getting bigger. There's quite a few more of them. I find it hard to believe that the game department would introduce a top-line predator like a blue channel catfish. We will never see, is my prediction, because I can't, I'm not clairvoyant. I wish I was. We will never see shad recover because of the blue channel catfish. We won't see herring recover because of blue channel catfish. And far as the crabs and low salinity, we will never see them recover with the predator problem we have there. So you go on down the line. The next thing is, one thing is water quality. A lot of it's being blamed on farmers. Some of it definitely should go their way. Some of it shouldn't. What are they paying? They have the highest grain prices in recorded history right now. So they're not paying anything on that. We have a large influx of sediment, nutrients and stuff coming out of Susquehanna River, which is inundated with dairy farms and stuff. Milk and poultry prices, I mean milk and cheese and everything is extremely high right now, the highest it's been. So they're not paying anything. We got municipalities and manufacturing plants using the Chesapeake Bay for sewage and plant wastewater disposal. They've been doing it for decades. What have they paid? Very little. We have people who are developing a lot of waterfront property now. It's the most expensive property in the country. The first thing they do is clear out all the natural buffers. Nobody wants to pay $500,000 for a piece of land on the water if they can't see the water. So that's got to go. So we've done away with a lot of the natural filtration that goes on. The homeowners would like to have a nice green yard. They don't want insects. They're probably overusing, in a lot of cases, pesticides, fertilizers, herbicides, all ends up in the water in very short order. because there's no buffers anymore. And the water quality to the point that we have a lot of dead areas devoid of oxygen. What can live in that? If we sealed up this room, yes, we all live for a little while because there's enough oxygen to sustain us, but when it's gone, we're gone. We have that problem right now in the Chesapeake Bay. The loss of seagrass, I don't think it could be attributed to a decline of menhaden or anything. The problem is we got excess nutrients, we have sediment, we have warmer temperatures. All of this is not contributing to any waterman. So from the looks of things, the watermen are the ones paying for everything. It's no one else really paying. I'll give you a good example. Quite a few years ago, we had a Fisteria scare. Whether it was Fisteria or not, it's still undetermined by some groups. We had one gentleman on the Eastern Shore that buys chicken fertilizer. He had it stored adjacent to a creek within feet of the creek that emptied into the Pocomoke Sound, which is where the Fisteria scare originated. The water was completely green in that tributary from runoff. He was probably 100% in his legal rights. I'm not going to say he did anything wrong. It's something that should be addressed, and it should be wrong, but it probably wasn't at the time. What did he pay? Nothing. What did the waterman pay? Immediate collapse of prices of seafood. You couldn't give Virginia seafood away. You know, and who had to pay for that? The waterman. We're to the point now we have hardly any processors left. What few we have left are hanging on by a thread. I'm sure Mr. Graham would certainly back that statement up. We have one crab picking house left in Virginia on the Eastern Shore, and that land's been sold to the developer, and he's on basically a year-to-year lease. So I'm sure that won't be too much longer before it's gone. In a case like this, you know, if we're going to do this, somebody else needs to be able to pay too. And I agree we need to send a message. And I know I'm going to be stepping on big toes, but sometimes big toes need to be stepped on. You've got to stir the pot. This is a case that we've got to stir the pot. Water quality is a big issue. Predation is a big issue. If we can't address that, we're not going to accomplish anything. Over the last 15 years, we've enacted probably 20 or more things. And now it's being credited with stemming decline, which can be argued either way. Statistics is everybody's friend. That's one thing about it. But we could easily take, just like some of the charts we've seen today, with the decline of the crabs since 1990, we could take a striped bass chart and invert that over top of it, and you would have the exact same graph. The only thing is you'd have it upside down because we know that crabs have no place to hide. So they're very vulnerable. If we're going to do something like this, something has to be done to help watermen to compensate things. You have people, I've figured up on Jack's calculations, it's 4 months and 20 days people are going to be without work. I doubt it's 5% of the people in the country that can go 4 months and 20 days without income, without losing everything they have. And then on top of that, when they do get to go back to work, you want a 30% reduction in pots in the spring. So you're going to have to tax some more really on that 4 months and 20 days because there will be some reduction. And it just amazes me, we can never calculate exactly what the reduction will be when we do something, but we can always calculate precisely what it is if we don't do something. So I find that hard to believe. The dredge issue, I started dredging in 1974 or 5. I don't do it any longer. I haven't in a good while, and I have health issues, and I'll never do it again. I've never tore up many crabs. If Mr. Weston was here today, he could tell you I carried him doing a VIM survey. We had very few tore up crabs. It's blowed out of proportion. It does happen. It shouldn't happen. It's something that needs to be addressed, most especially with a fishery that's on the decline like crabs have been. But my whole thing is, I could never back anything without a stipulation that some funding for the watermen has to be found. Just to put people out of work, Tangier is probably in worse shape than anywhere as far as that goes because there is no jobs available. But in this economic climate, there's no jobs available on the Eastern Shore. Both counties are depressed, not just Tangier, it's both counties. Tangier is in a unique situation because they're waterlocked. We should be able to find the money. If the government really is taking the water quality issue seriously, Richmond and Worst both should be able to find some funding for that. I think that's the message we need to send. The watermen have suffered enough, and it's time, if you want them to suffer more, they need to be compensated in some way. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bowden. Next. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Today represents the low water mark for the Chesapeake Bay blue crab and its management in Virginia. The crab resource, the crab industry, and this commission are now caught in a perfect storm of degraded environmental conditions, including reduced water quality, substantial losses of early life stage habitat for blue crabs, including SAV and oyster reefs, predation associated with a fully recovered rockfish population, and a management plan that allowed overfishing to occur with regularity. The degraded environmental conditions ultimately exposed the fatal weakness of a management plan that was originally built around open access to the resource, only to be followed by a limited entry system that issued hardship licenses that were ultimately unsustainable in the end and led to a tragedy to commons. In the long term, the Commission can and must develop an effective effort control system to manage the resource and fishery for sustainability, biologically and economically. The Commission has already taken responsible steps towards this objective. Pursuant to the release of the adverse findings of the 2006 Bi-State Blue Crab Stock Assessment, which indicated that overfishing was occurring consistently in the fishery, the Commission requested a comprehensive scientific review of the state's management plan. Like the stock assessment, the findings of the review were stark and recommended immediate corrective action, including interim management measures designed to correct overfishing in the near term and to develop a long-term effort control system for a long-term solution. The Blue Crab Committee has already met to review potential pot tagging systems and discuss issues that will need to be scoped in the development of the system, and the committee has suggested additional long-term measures, some of which you've heard today, including upriver sanctuaries to better protect crabs from harvest throughout their life cycle. The interim baywide goal is to increase the abundance of blue crabs aged 1-plus to a level of 200 million crabs. In the long term, rebuilding the blue crab to a healthy level will require a much broader and holistic environmental initiative that also restores SAV and improves water quality. In the short term, however, the Commission is now faced with an executive directive to adopt a specific option and is in an impossible position. Clearly, the best available science says that overfishing is occurring under the management plan, and the winter dredge survey indicates a 34% reduction in harvest is needed to constrain the fishing exploitation to the target level. The status quo is consequently untenable and indefensible. The governor's directive leaves us with no choice but to make such a cut. And even notwithstanding the cut, the directive, it is our statutory responsibility. Our standards for fisheries management plans under 28.2-203, the Code of Virginia, require that conservation and management measures shall prevent overfishing. It's not an optional measure. The necessary cuts are made even more extreme now by the fact that the relative abundance of crabs has declined in the recent winter dredge survey. This only makes the cuts more difficult. And yet, we're being asked to achieve such a reduction using existing tools and a relatively rigid management plan, which is static and was not designed to function adaptively in response to changing environmental conditions. We're being asked now to turn an aircraft carrier on a dime in mid-season, and there's no simple or painless way to do it. Consequently, the proposed cures are relatively blunt, and substantial economic impacts are essentially unavoidable. Clearly, in the long term, we need to recast the management plan to include an adaptive effort control system that will allow the Commission to adaptively manage the resource in response to changing biological conditions while stabilizing the economics of the fishery. We're being asked to make, on the dredge fishery, a tragic compromise. The dredge fishery has operated since 1906, and we're being asked to compromise it in order to save the pot fishery. The dredge fishery's 97% female composition of harvest, combined with the waste issues on the one hand, and the staggering 34% conservation hurdle on the other, have left the dredge fishery caught in the middle. In economic terms, we're thus asked to eliminate 55 licenses in order to try to save 1,100 licenses in the pot fisheries. If the commission eliminates this fishery, as Mr. Bowden said, we have to work with the governor's office to pursue emergency economic relief, in my opinion, for the 150 fishing jobs that are at stake in that fishery. As Mr. Dye said from Tangier today, his bills are going to keep coming this winter, and we need to provide relief for those affected fishermen, in my opinion. The Blue Crab Committee met last Wednesday, one day after learning of the executive directive, and was asked to comment and vote on the proposed regulatory action. The committee voted to immediately reduce gear by 30% in the pot fisheries, in addition to other measures, rather than closing the fall season. The committee expressed serious reservations about the accounting-driven nature of the proposed cuts and commented that they could potentially knock us off course. That is, the fall closure was presented by staff as preferred over and against immediate gear reductions, and yet the committee indicated that we cannot recover the resource in the near term, that is, this year, without in-season effort reductions, as Mr. Nixon spoke to during his presentation. The committee voted for a major reduction in effort, and their rationale included the preservation of the length of the season, consistent with their economic priorities, immediate conservation benefits for the resource through the season, including this year's spawning season, and a fundamental recognition that the primary problem facing the crab with respect to overexploitation is that too many pots are catching a depleted and diminishing crab resource throughout the season, not simply at the end of the season. Furthermore, they pointed out that gear reductions would spread the burden across the part-time, full-time, and feeder pot fishery, and not just the full-time hard crab potter. They recognized the uncertainty between effort and exploitation that Mr. Travelstead spoke to earlier, and they proposed to buffer for that uncertainty by reducing the gear by 30%. The committee expressed additional concern over the fact that the fall closure allows the feeder fishery and the pot fishery to continue unabated all season long until the end of the fall season. The fall closure, together with the dredge closure, will reduce a year-round fishery by over 4 months. In the long term, we have already said as a commission that it's in our interest to try to maintain a full-time pot fishery to the greatest extent practicable. It's not in Virginia's long-term interest to have a short pot season. Rather, we should eventually protect the length of the season and reduce effort and constrain it within that season to a sustainable level and let the fishery rationalize according to market forces within those constraints. This will maximize full-time employment in the fishery and allow Virginia to have a viable product for 9 or 10 months a year. A market-based effort control system will ultimately allow us to manage for both our conservation and economic objectives. Consequently, the fall season option, which the Secretary has indicated, is absolutely critical for the coordination with Maryland to achieve this year's 34% reduction in their cooperation with Maryland, in my opinion, should be viewed as a one-year emergency action and sunsetted by regulation in the regulation at the end of the year. The committee clearly expressed a preference for in-season effort reductions in order to be effective at achieving the conservation objectives. Some pot reductions on the order of 20 to 30% in the feeder fishery and 10 to 15% in the hard crab pot fishery, together with the Baywide 2 and 3/8 cull ring, should be adopted immediately in order to ensure that the commission achieves its conservation objectives. Such a reduction would be a precautionary buffer to compensate for responses and effort that might otherwise occur in response to the fall closure. I think history clearly tells us that if we constrain this fishery on one end, it will squeeze out on the other, and we can't afford to run that risk. If we're going to put the industry through such a tumultuous set of regulatory impacts in the near term, we must be effective at achieving our conservation goals. Half measures will not recover the resource and will only bleed the industry to death. This year is a year that we have to endure collectively to get to next year when we can implement the effort control system and allow transfers to provide economic relief and stability. Mr. Chairman, I think it's critical as we look to the long term that the commission be very closely involved together with stakeholders as we work in the bi-state process to develop appropriate bi-state options. I think it's clear, too, that whatever is done in the long term needs to reflect the differences between the fisheries. The option that's preferred at this point in time and recommended by staff, I think, does raise some questions about the differences of impacts between Virginia and Maryland, and yet the Secretary has made it very clear to me that it's critical that we take this step for this year, and I would suggest that step be limited to this year in terms of constraining the season but we need to develop long-term options that appropriately reflect the differences between our state's fisheries, and we need to move together towards effective effort control to bring the fishery to a point of sustainability and economic stability.
Thank you, Mr. Robbins. Further comment? Dr. McConaughey?
I concur that water quality and habitat are a big part of our problem. They're not going to go away tomorrow. There's no way you can look at it. But if you look at these graphs, we've been at historic low spawning stock for 10 years now, bouncing just above that critical line that may indicate a crash in the fishery. And if you look historically, when a fishery crashes, there's no guarantee it'll come back. There are lots of species that have crashed, and the overall population never comes back. Something else takes its place. We have clear signs that we have a depressed population, which includes overfishing. Reproduction has declined. Somebody mentioned 2.5 million. I wish it was that. It's down to about 1.7 million eggs per brood. And a couple years ago, it was even lower than that. It's at one point, it was like 300,000 eggs per brood. So that's one sign that we're having a major problem and a shift in the overall population. We saw a picture of the small crabs up here. And I know a lot of people think that it's genetics, but it's more likely that it's a sign of reduced population size. These females are trying to reproductively contribute to the population. It makes more sense for them to actually mature at a smaller size and younger age in order to do that. I have a colleague who is now looking to find a gene so that we can actually measure that, whether it's a genetic process or a physiological process, but that's going to take some time to actually get that done. We have to have a short-term answer to this question. It doesn't do us any good to sit around the table and continue to talk for the next year or so to come up with a long-term plan if the fishery is gone. If it crashes, we can have all the discussions we want, and it may or may not have an effect. So I think on the short term, we do need to move ahead. The call rings bay-wide is probably a very important aspect. Unfortunately, closing the winter dredge fishery on the short term, at least for a year or 2 years, makes logical sense. Those crabs that have come down, and I sympathize, somebody mentioned that by October 23rd they're out of Maryland and they're down here, but that doesn't relieve us of the responsibility of trying to save some of that spawning population. They have high reproductive value, so if we can conserve them in the fall, winter, and into the spring, we may have a larger spawning population at the end of as we move into June and July. As Mr. Robbins said, a lot of these actions that we might take, with the exception of the call rings bay-wide starting this year, will affect next year's reproductive stock. If we want to protect some of this year's reproductive stock, then maybe we should consider gear reductions sometime during this year, along with the call rings. But I think that failure to act and act now is probably the worst thing that we can do. I know I sympathize. I realize that people, their livelihoods at stake, and I agree that there should be some effort to push for some kind of compensation to help those people out. I did notice that in California, as soon as they closed the salmon fishery indefinitely, that Arnold was on the phone to Washington asking for help. Of course, he has a little more clout maybe than some of us do. But compensation to help some of these people get through some of this, if there is any way that we can do it. Unfortunately, we're in pretty tight budget constraints at the moment.
Thank you, Dr. McConaughey. Further comment? Mr. Fox and Mr. Schick?
Go ahead. VMRC has participated in many areas for habitat management, and I think it's something that's to be noted, that SAV survey and replanting and fin fish and oyster habitat construction, along with its ongoing efforts with private industry to rebound the oyster industry, has been something that has been prevalent in the past here, and I think it's something that needs to go into more of a mode with the other agencies. Unfortunately, contrary to what has been said here, we really only have control of what comes out of the bay, and we do not have control of what goes into the bay. The health department, DEQ, federal agencies, these are the guys that really have the teeth to be able to clamp down on the sources that causes the habitat destruction and oxygen depletion. If delaying things a month would do to do us some good, I would be the first on board for it. If it's something that would guarantee some type of relief for the watermen that are put out of work for this time, I would be the first to be for it. I don't know if that would help the situation. I'll leave that to powers to be that know more about that than I do. But I do know one thing. Half measures are worse than no measures at all. We cannot continue to do little bits and pieces and see an increase in abundancy for a short period of time only to be disappointed later. And the entire bay is on the edge of the tipping point, and it's just not the crab industry. The crab industry is the most recent victim of that tipping point. And when we make rebounds in one area, it hurts another area, and we've seen that with rockfish. And you know, we do try as hard as we can. I go to these meetings with the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, and the other states will not hear what we have to say about the rockfish. And we do not have the control to just change that with a vote here. But we do continue those efforts, and I just want you all to know that. So I just, you know, in a situation that what can we do to send a message to Richmond to say, you know, you want 34% reduction in female crabs, but we also want to protect an industry and a way of life.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Fox?
Well, I agree with everything that's been said about the compensation. We certainly, anything we enact is going to put a major hurt on the watermen. And there's precedent, as Dr. McConaughey said, for compensation being granted in other states. And I would hope that whatever comes of this meeting, we make a strong request to the governor for such compensation here. Delay in 30 days, it doesn't seem to me accomplishes a great deal, because as I understand these regulations, at least the ones that Jack has proposed, many of those don't go into effect immediately. And certainly if someone comes up with a brilliant idea within the next 30 days, we're not going to ignore it. We're going to accept it, act on it, and leave it in as an emergency measure. So I see delaying 30 days doesn't make any sense. Adding the call rings statewide makes sense to me. It's something we can do right now. I think we had July 1 up there. I don't know whether we have to wait that long, but that's something we could do. And I think Mr. Nixon pointed out that he thought that we were talking about two additional call rings and leaving the call rings that are already in the pots. I don't know whether that's what Jack and staff proposed or whether he just proposed two of the new size call rings, but that needs to be resolved. There have been some comments about immediately reducing the number of pots. Certainly, if you want to help the population, that's something we should look at. I don't know how you would monitor it, how you would enforce it, but that's something we can do. I mean, we would, I think would be a good idea if we could do it. A number of the people who spoke addressed the issue of peeler pots and what to do about the peeler pots and the fact that we have more peeler pots than we did in the past, and apparently this is a concern. I don't know. I don't have an answer to that, but I would hope that maybe Jack would have a response or some input on what to do about the peeler pots. I know that we didn't know what size call ring to put in them, but could we reduce the number of peeler pots? I don't know if that's something we can do. I realize I've rambled a great deal. It gets back to water quality. I've read this document that Ms. Washington pointed out to us, and it I think it's clear from that we don't have the authority to change the water quality regulations. That's held elsewhere in DEQ and elsewhere. But we do have the opportunity and responsibility to make suggestions. I think we have made suggestions in the past, and I would just encourage the commissioner to make sure that we are being very vocal in making our suggestions. That's about it.
Mr. Holland?
I'll make mine very short. I don't see any need of repeating what my fellow commission members have said. I do agree with what they have said, and the one thing I do want to do is to be very strong in our recommendation that the watermen be compensated if they're out of work with the regulations that we pass.
Thank you. Mr. Fusker?
Yes, I'm going back a long time ago in the World War II. At the end of the war, they had WPA. It took care of the soldiers when they didn't have any employment. It wasn't a handout. They went in and built roads. They developed parks and also dams and all sorts of public benefits. And I'd like to relate the working watermen's position that they should be offered some kind of constructive employment, temporary, and get out to help plant grass and do the best things they know better on the bay. Now, for one, like I say, this we should take have another meeting to lay this one and send a strong message up to Richmond to visit our position. After Fort Ernest's recommendation.
Repeat your last comment.
I said that I believe that we should delay this meeting for another month, sending a strong message to Richmond that this commission is serious about finding gainful employment, not handouts, the commercial watermen that are being put out of work through no fault of their own. And I didn't know until yesterday that the watermen are not even entitled to unemployment. I think it's certainly something that certainly should be sent to Richmond. And answer. Thank you.
Mr. Tanker?
Well, certainly a tough position for all of us in the state of Virginia. Unfortunately, the watermen have to pay the price. Really paying the price for society's problems, I feel. It seems apparent that we have overfished in what is almost a dead bay. And our population really doesn't realize how bad off the bay is, that it is almost dead. Perhaps there needs to be some message sent to Richmond to help them understand what bad shape we are in Tidewater, Virginia. I know I started crabbing, my first job I ever had. I never had a problem picking up crabs at as a five-year-old boy with a net and getting a bushel or two every day. Wasn't a big deal. I never thought we'd be at this point in our state, that our crab, the scavenger of the bay, would almost be at a what scientists call a tipping point, a crisis point. It's really pretty unbelievable that what we've done to ourselves. But again, unfortunately, we're overfishing this fishery, and we have to do something, and I think we have to take action today. I regret it. Believe me, I sympathize particularly with my Tangier compatriots. Like a lot on the Eastern Shore, we the Tangiermen sort of symbolize a lot of what we are about, the culture, the lifestyle, our histories together. You know, they choose to be watermen. It's a good life, strong lifestyle. It's an upstanding lifestyle. It's too bad that that lifestyle has to be subject to this kind of decision-making process, this kind of regulation. But I think we have to take action in hopes that their children and our future, there will be crabs. I do think there's one thing in studying this, Mr. Nixon, it's taken us more than just this moment of the commission meeting. Thinking about it, it's been months. I do think that this peeler fishery is something that correlates real strongly with the decrease in the number of potted crabs. I do think in long term we need to be aware of this and take action on that. But again, I think we have to take action today, and I think the action we need to take is along the lines of what staff has recommended to us. And I appreciate staff's hard work. They do not compromise themselves in the work they do, and they're in it for the best of Virginians and our water and our fishery. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Taggart. This is definitely a difficult position to be in, both from your perspective and from ours. Just to spell a little bit of what I heard a little while ago about this being an executive directive, I'd like to quote from Governor Kane's specific speech that he made in Colonial Beach with Governor O'Malley. Our goal is to remove no more than 46% of the available crabs that have been exceeded in 8 of the last 10 years, reaching 60% in 2007. We cannot protect, let alone rebuild a stock, while we are overfishing at that rate. Therefore, we are directing our regulatory agencies to take immediate steps to reduce the 2008 crab harvest and to take all measures necessary to create a sustainable fishery. I think what the governors meant then at that point was they had placed it in our hands, in our staff's hands, to do what we're required to do under the laws of the Commonwealth of Virginia and the State of Maryland in managing this fishery. Let me tell you how I observed we've gone about this. We've evaluated the stock. Winter dredge fishery indicates that we're at a precarious position and have been at a precarious position for such a long time. We also undertook evaluation of our regulatory measures. No, some of them have not worked, but one can also argue that if we had not undertaken the 15% that have been lamented somewhat today, we may be in even more of a dire situation and maybe even closer to being on the virtual precipice of collapse. As to the dredge fishery, I must go on record that I am concerned with the dredge fishery. I believe that fishery, by virtue of the fact that it takes 97% female, is a fishery that if we were to eliminate it, although there be some hardship to those involved who are also crab potters, I think that the rewards that you will see based on the elimination will be short in coming. I encourage you to adopt the measures that were presented to you today to prevent a potential collapse of this public resource. And after all, it is a public resource. And I sympathize with all of those that make their living on the water. I really do. But the resource is there for all citizens of the Commonwealth of Virginia, and not just for the present, for the future. As to water quality, there's been some significant discussion today about water quality mandates. Do this, do that. Tell the governor this, tell the governor that. And they're all well-intended, and they're all heard very well by myself. But when we leave here today, let's just don't forget about what we're going to tell the governor, what we're going to tell Secretary Bryant. When you go home today, let's practice what we preach, and the world will all be a better place. I encourage you to adopt staff's recommendations that have been promulgated, that would be promulgated, pursuant to Section 28.2201 of the Code of Virginia, which specifies the authority of the commission, which states the commission may promote the general welfare of seafood industry and to conserve and promote the seafood and marine resources of the Commonwealth. The matter is before the commission for action.
Mr. Chairman, could we have that list of the staff recommendations?
Take time to look at that real fast. Jack, a question came up earlier about the coal ring aspect. What was, and Mr. Nixon, I didn't know if we could figure out whether you meant four coal rings or two coal rings. What was the intent?
Mr. Nixon has
four.
Long supported additions of additional coal rings in addition to what we now have. Four rings are better than two coal rings. I think I pointed out to the advisory committee when we met last week that down in North Carolina, they use the 2 3/8-inch coal ring, and some fishermen down there have as many as 6 or 8 coal rings in their pots. So, you know, the more you have, the more opportunity for escapement. So staff has no objection to adding the 2 3/8 to what we already have, although we initially did recommend just simple replacement. The other question that came up was, what can we do on peeler pots? I think Mr. Fox, and of course we have adopted the increase in peeler size, and that's part of the 11% credit that we're getting, and we are recommending a 30% reduction in peeler pots starting next year, although there's been a lot of conversation about starting that this year, and certainly that would bolster the probability that you hit your goal of a 34% reduction.
Mr. Fox, you have a comment?
I just have a question for Jack.
Proceed.
Whenever Jack gets to the stopping point.
I think he's there.
If we wanted to go to reduce the 30% reduction start earlier, how difficult would that be to do, or how would you do it?
The 30% reduction in crab pots and peeler pots, how would you do that?
Yeah.
When would you start it?
No. Well, if you did it earlier than the start of the 2009 season.
Yes.
Let's say you wanted to do it this year sometime. Do we have the ability to enforce something?
It will be difficult to enforce, yeah. And it would rely a lot on the waterman being responsible and obeying the law. But to say that, yes, with reasonable certainty that all involved will abide by that, no. Majority, as Jack indicated or someone indicated earlier, are good, honest, hardworking people. But without a pot tagging program, there's absolutely no way, with reasonable certainty, I think Mr. Graham stated about the number of summonses that have been issued, and he is exactly right. It's a very difficult thing to enforce. However, do you not do something because it may not be a benefit to the fishery? I don't think so. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could just address that issue. That is something that we've already advertised for this year. In other words, we did advertise for 2008 pot reductions. Just so you know, it's not on the list of staff's recommendations at this point in time, but it was the committee's recommendation. If you did it by May 1st, you would certainly catch savings on the doubler run that's coming up in the month of May on the peeler side of the fishery. So it would have an immediate effect. I'd like to speak to the issue of delaying. There were a lot of requests to table this for a month, and I think there are a couple issues that are raised there. One is the fact that to the extent that we're considering in-season closures right now and emergency closures, the point of those is to achieve conservation benefits starting now, starting immediately. And I think if we delay, the hurdle just gets higher. It gets harder to pay back the hurdle. So I think a delay would actually limit rather than expand our options unfortunately. I think it's also, at this point, wrapped up in the bi-state initiative such that it is important to take action today. And I think on the issue of emergency economic relief, we can certainly seek that today. And I think we should, to the extent that we have to take strong action on the dredge fishery.
I can assure you that we are in daily contact pertaining to the relief aspect of it. From as I said earlier, what can we do, and what's coming down the pipe? If I were to say I knew something for certain, it would be a gross injustice to all that are here. But I can assure you that we're looking at every possible avenue at our avail to work with those most impacted. I can assure you that. If I had the money, I would not be opposed to that. Okay. Matters before the commission for action or further. Mr. Fox.
If you want a motion.
Yes, sir.
If we can number those things, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yes, sir.
I will move number 1. And number 2 being two additional 2 3/8-inch call rings and apply to the whole state. And number 4 and number 6, I will move those. And
set them straight. Number 1, number 2 with the 2 3-inch statewide or a total of 4?
Statewide.
2 3-inch, okay.
You doing anything with the peeler pots? Time? Are you?
I'm just leaving 3.
Kathy,
four,
you recording this motion?
Deal with.
Okay. Continue again, Mr. Fox. I mean to interrupt. I just want to make sure I've gotten it straight.
Now, 1, 2, 5, and 6. I'm going to leave 3 and 4 for you all to discuss and for another motion because I'm not.
Did you put any compensation on 1?
Yes. Go. Yes. If we can add.
That we will seek compensation.
Seek compensation.
Because we can't promise. We will seek.
Yes.
Okay. 1, 2, 5, and 6. Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
Second by Mr. Schick.
My discussion now,
yes,
is
sir.
I am leaving
3 and 4
out for further discussion by this.
That's fine. Kathy, do you understand that motion? Mm-hmm. Motion made, so I'll read it off. By Mr. Fox, for statewide closure of winter dredge fishery and repeal of all other crab dredge regulations. Number 2, require 2 and 2 and to seek compensation.
For the people affected, okay. I'm sorry.
Number 2, require 2 2 3/8 coal rings in any crab pot placed statewide.
And that would be 2 additional.
Two additional. So a total of 4 2 3/8-inch coal rings. Is that correct?
No.
4 2 3/8.
No. 2 additional 2 3/8, and the other 2 are whatever they are now.
Jack.
I don't want to have to.
You don't have to remove them at this point.
Yeah, at right. This point.
Okay.
Just add 2 additional.
Yes, 2 okay. Additional. 2 2 3/8 plus 1 2 5/16 plus 1 2 3/16.
Whatever they have.
Okay,
they
that's are. Fine.
That is what it would be. And it's statewide.
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 Yes.
Now, how about these are short?
Just a minute.
No. Statewide, excluding the seaside of the of the Delmarva Peninsula.
That makes.
And the recreational pots would also have to have the same coal rings.
But if you just want to put 2 over, you get 2.
Okay. Number 5 is eliminate. The 5-pot commercial license for recreational purposes until the winter dredge survey projects an abundance of age 1-plus crabs at over 200 million. And next is requiring summoning of any person to the commission for a license revocation who's been convicted of a two crab violation. Net crab conservation, like Jack, it's not Life Jack. And as far as I'm concerned, blue crab conservation does not mean law enforcement. If they get three, they come anyway. But if the crab pots are in the channel, that's not a conservation violation. Conservation is plugging the call rings, doing other things that's conservation-oriented. Seconded by Mr. Schick. Further discussion. Mr. Robbins.
Mr. Chairman, I would request a clarification on whether or not the seaside of the Eastern Shore is excluded from the regulation, and if it's not, I would offer that as a friendly amendment.
It is.
Is it excluded? Okay.
Yes, sir.
Let me just clarify one thing before you vote.
About to dredge?
The provisions to extend the coal ring statewide would take is an emergency regulation because that was not advertised. So that will be effective for 30 days. You'll have to come back next month, hold another public hearing on that specific item, and vote yet again to make it permanent.
That's fine. Yes, Mr. Bowden.
Beforehand. Mr. Fox, I'm having trouble hearing. Well, period. It doesn't have to pertain to you. But we've excluded the call rings on the seaside of the Eastern Shore. You've also, are you making number one contingent on finding funding or suggestion?
No, I'm saying we will seek diligently for funding.
Well, then I really won't be able to support the motion.
All right, further comment? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
What are we doing with the other?
We're going to discuss those other two next.
Okay, so we're going.
We're voting on 1, 2, 5, and 6 now.
Okay.
All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
No.
Two noes. Mr. McCleskey and Mr. Bowden. Now, the other two items are up for discussion. Fall closure, 30% reduction in crab pots. Matters before the commission for discussion. No, sir. Not at this time.
I just want to say one thing. Just let me say,
go ahead.
We have four months of crab dredging, right in winter time.
Okay.
That's 80 days, workable days.
Okay.
We don't dredge more on Saturday. Okay. And you can ask anybody. It's a crab dredger. We have 80 days. I've been digging the winter bomb by the last 5 or 6. We ain't worked 50 of them. The other year.
Okay.
With all kind of weather conditions.
Okay. Thank you. Sir, the next item on the agenda is the two other remaining items. Fall closure and 30% reduction. The matter is before the commission for discussion. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would offer a motion that we close the fall harvest by any gear of female clip crabs per staff's recommendation from October 27th through November 30th. That we adopt the next item, a 30% reduction in 2009 crab season, simply as a placeholder would be the purpose of that, Jack. And third, that trying again to adopt the committee's advice that you heard reiterated here today, that we have to take immediate action this year to reduce fishing mortality to give us the best chance of moving forward and achieving the conservation objective this year so that we have increased abundance by next year, that we reduce peeler pots by 30% and hard crab pots by 15% effective May 1 this year.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead and get a second. I'll explain.
Second to the motion?
Second. I'll second it.
Second by Mr. Tankard.
If I may, the rationale on the differential between the 15 and 30%, the hard crab pot fishery is already taking a substantial cut in the month of October and November through the seasonal closure. And I think this is simply a matter of balancing out from an equity perspective that and trying to get some conservation benefit out of the peeler fishery during these first double runs of the year.
Motion made and seconded. Further discussion? Mr. Bowden?
I guess I'm the devil's advocate. Some days I feel like the devil itself. And today happens to be one of them. A 30% reduction on somebody that has a 500-pot license, he'll probably have a chance to still make a living. We have a lot of 100 and 150-pot license. You're leaving a man with
85 hot at 15%.
I just can't. I can't envision people making a living on that, and a lot of them are seaside people. You know, Maryland has taken the approach that they have two different management regimes altogether. They have a baywide and a coastal. And, you know, we haven't taken that approach. So and most of the people I know either have 100 or 150 pot license on the seaside. So it's really going to affect them much more so. And I just, there's no way I can support it. You know, like I said earlier, you're putting people out of work for over 4 months. And not only are you affecting their livelihood as far as crabbing is concerned, you may very well shove them under financially, period. And I just can't do a 30% reduction. It's going to be on honest fishermen. It's not going to be on people who, you know, we know right now there's people that exploit the limits. There's no doubt about it. And it makes it bad on law enforcement. They're going to have to go out and camp.
That's why we want a pot tagging program.
I mean, it's just going to be hard. I mean, you...
I'm sorry. Mr. Robbins.
Mr. Chairman, if I can address that. I think 15%, while it's a substantial sacrifice, it's not at all inappropriate given the condition that the resource is in at this time. The 30%, if we didn't have a tagging and transfer system, would be extremely difficult for the individual. I absolutely agree with that. But I think what we've communicated to the public for the past few months is that we are trying to move with flank speed towards developing a pot tagging system and presumably a transfer system to accompany that to allow folks to transfer as necessary to maintain full strength and operate really on a full-time basis. And that's going to be a critical ingredient to bringing that economic stability to the fishery. And what we're we can talk after this motion a little bit about what other actions we might take toward that. So.
Can I address?
Yes, sir.
The problem I see is you have to have fishermen left at the end of the year. You know, we're already hitting with 34%. We can't quantify what a 15 or 30% reduction is going to be. We've already heard that from staff. It's going to be substantial. You know, we're to the point now, the kind of financial aid we need is close it down and pay them all a living. Because you're going to, just going to shove them all out anyway. If you're going to shove them out, let them do something different.
But that's enough, please.
We're just starving everybody out of the fishery.
I, Jeff, further comment, Mr. Robbins?
Not at this time. Go ahead.
I've heard it said today that we are putting people out of business. That just please, I gave you your chance to speak when your time came, and I said earlier, we do not relish or cherish the position of making these decisions today. We are placed in a position by virtue of volunteering for positions on this commission to make difficult decisions. We're not making difficult decisions just for the sake of making them. We have to make decisions that are in the best interest of the resource and the people involved. So I understand where you're coming from, especially as you sit here as a longtime commercial waterman, seeing these regulations and taking the brunt of them. But I don't think that I am personally putting anybody out of business. The resource being what it is now is causing these actions to be taken. So I just want to make sure that you're clear on where I'm coming from as far as that's concerned.
I really understand where you're coming from, but we're overfishing because of such a reduced population due to other factors. And that's the reason it's overfishing. If we had a healthy stock, we would be nowhere near overfishing. We would be grossly underfishing. The fact is we just don't have it. And
that's what I want to get back.
You feel differently than I do. I do feel like we are putting people out of, not just out of work. You know, people can't go for almost 5 months with no income. People can't, then on top of that, ask them to take another 30% reduction in gear that we know is going to affect people disproportionately, because you have some people that's going to abide by the letter of the law, you have other people that don't. And I, you know, it's bad enough with the fall closure on females. I could even live with it. I don't like it. But there's no way I can live with a 30% reduction on gear on top of everything else to have to deal with.
Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of points. I'd like to clarify on the motion for the season that be for those dates be effective for 2008 and sunset at that point. In other words, the fall season closure of October 27th through November 30th would just be a one-year provision.
Okay.
Okay. For this year. For 2008. I'm sorry, for this year.
Motion made and second. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
Motion passes 7-2. Same dissent. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We had one other item as a committee we recommended for action, and that was that we pass a regulation requiring that a crab pot would not be marked with not more than one identification number to better facilitate law enforcement as it relates to pot limits.
When would be the effective date of that?
The effective date would be July 1. I think it would be
time enough to get them out, get them cleaned. And
yeah, and I think it's up to you. I think it might be appropriate to pass it as an emergency, simply so that we can have the July 1 date and give people plenty of time to be aware of it, since they're going to be gear modifications that have to be done anyway on that July 1 date, namely the installation of the two additional coal rings.
Sounds good. Is there a second to the motion? Second by Mr. Tankard. Further discussion?
I do have some discussion.
Yes, sir.
I don't have a problem. Let me address him and then. My problem is it wasn't advertised.
Okay.
So it should be addressed. I have no real problem with that factor, but I do believe people should be allowed to address it.
That's fine. I think what's important that we communicate to the public is the July 1 date, so that you can have plenty of time to consider the implementation.
Your motion is to advertise for public hearing next month.
Right.
Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Tankard. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Thank you. Mr. Jenkins.
He doesn't understand the circumstances. In Potomac and the tributaries, we have license for the crab in both places, and we have to have it, the Potomac license number on as well as Virginia, because we can't buy another set of pots for going in Potomac and Buzz.
Okay, we can look at that.
We got to have that two number on that. That's why I don't want y'all to vote on something other than people don't understand the crab was in a situation in the state.
Thank you.
Thank you. Same in North Carolina is why they have theirs.
Okay. Any further discussion on item number 13? Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to ask that we ask staff next month for a presentation of a draft timeline for the development of the pot tagging and effort control system, if we could get a report back from staff so we can have an update and timetable as to the potential development of that.
Jack, can you do that? Yes, sir.
So much confusion, y'all went so fast. Can you tell us exactly what the laws are? Because I don't really have a clue right now.
Jack.
And what the date is that these laws have to be implemented?
What was adopted, or what has since been adopted? Item one, statewide closure of the winter dredge fishery and repeal of all other crab regulations effective May 1.
With the intent of contacting or trying to seek relief? As far as that's concerned.
With the commission endorsing the seeking of compensation for the dredgers. Number two is modified such that there's now a requirement statewide, except for the Seaside Eastern Shore, that there be four cull rings in every crab pot. Two and 3/8 inch, one, 2 5/16 inch, and one, 2 3/16 inch. Number three.
When does that start?
That would start July 1. Number five, elimination of the 5-pot commercial license for recreational purposes till the dredge survey results project an abundance of 200 million crabs. Number six, requiring summonses for any person to the commission for a license revocation hearing convicted of two conservation regulations in a 12-month period. Number three, a fall closure to the harvest by any gear of female crabs from October 27th through November 30.
For this year.
For this year only.
Yep.
And finally, a 30% reduction in crab pots and peeler pots, effective with the start of the 09 crab season, plus a reduction this year, effective May 1, of a 30% reduction in peeler pots and a 15% reduction in hard crab pots. And then finally, a motion for a public hearing next month to require crab pot buoys not be marked with more than one number, with a possible exception for Potomac River tributaries.
In North Carolina.
And then finally, staff will draft a timeline for you next month on how to continue to discuss and implement a crab pot tagging program and effort reduction and transfer program.
Thank you.
You've not voted on the draft timeline. The vote on the public hearing
was
unanimous.
I don't think we need a vote on that. That's a directive from commission to staff. It's not a motion. It's a directive.
Yes, there was a motion. And,
it was carried.
It was unanimous.
Thank you very much. The next item on the agenda is item 14, striped bass, review of the 2007 commercial fishery ITQ program. Right now.